Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
Paul, what you've written just isn't fair.
Not fair.
That's right. When I was growing up in Bakersfield, my favorite thing in all the world was to go to the movies on Saturday afternoons for the chapter plays.
Cliffhangers.
I know that, Mr. Man. They also call them serials. I'm not stupid, you know. Anyway, my favorite was Rocket Man. And once it was a No Brakes chapter. And the bad guys stuck him in a car on a mountain road, knocked him out, and welded the doors shut, and tore out the brakes, and started him to his death. And he woke up and tried to steer and tried to get out, but the car went off a cliff before he could escape. And it crashed and burned, and I was so upset and excited. And the next week, you better believe I was first in line. And they always start with the end of the last week. And there was Rocket Man trying to get out. And here comes the cliff. And just before the car went off the cliff, he jumped free. And all the kids cheered. But I didn't cheer. I stood right up and started shouting, "This isn't what happened last week! Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us! This isn't fair! He didn't get out of the cock-a-doodle car!"
I'm gonna be very clear, Donna. No way is that related to your menstrual cycle, or any of your behavior today, or any sort of a vibe or tone that seems to be emanating from you.
Do not believe you.
All right. Occasionally, I will I'll segue that into something really hilarious, which, by the way, I should say is a flat out steal from Don and Mike. Don and Mike, who once upon a time had a radio program, and I believe Mike is still doing his own thing online, but. They did one of the greatest bits in the history of all radio, which is where they were trying to find, I should actually just replicate this entire thing someday. I mean, and not even pretending that it's my own bit, because it's not. But they did one of the most absurd, genius radio bits ever, and it ended up climaxing with misery, and I'll tell you what it was. They were trying to find the worst possible segue imaginable between a movie sequence and then a piece of music. They were trying to find just like the worst, most inappropriate, most train wreck of a transition from a movie to a song. And it ended up being the sequence in Misery where she says, "You know what they used to do with Indian diamond miners?" And she's like putting the block between his ankles and she's getting the sledgehammer. "I'm going to have to hobble you, Paul." And they led it right up to where she smashes his ankles with the sledgehammer. And then they segued immediately to the segue from The Candyman by Sammy Davis Jr. The Candyman. It was the best.
Oh, God.
I thought really I was going to lose control of my functions. Anyway, there you go. That's in all fairness, I actually had that one pulled yesterday as well when I gave you the choice between when I said kitschy and campy and horrifying or something, and that was the horrifying one.
Oh, okay.
So we'll do the other one on Monday. Why, hello to you. It is 15 minutes after the hour of one in this, because it'll still be nature special time on Monday, won't it? That's how that works, right?
It will, but I'm really only goofy like this the first day.
I thought it was, well, never mind.
God, what do you want to know?
No.
What do you need to know?
I got to do this. I got to do this intro first, or we'll never get it done. If I don't actually do the intro of the show now, it's never going to happen. All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 15 minutes after the hour of one, and this, the month of July in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, a place of glory and magic and gumdrops and goodness. It is Friday. Thank you for being out there. If you'd like to join us today, I have just activated the phone line. There we go. 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. 64, if you'd like to engage with us telephonically speaking, you can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com, rick@rickemerson.com, or Dawn, D-A-W-N, @rickemerson.com. The chat box is open as well. One of these days, you and I had a trade-off, and I should have the text box, because when you text the show, you're not really texting the show so much as you're texting Dawn, who then relays information to me as she sees fit, parceling it out like bread during a prison riot. And so one of these days, we had to just, swap it off.
Yeah, we could.
I'll give you the phone. You can give me the text box. All right, so yeah, we'll do that.
I can see nothing that could possibly go wrong with that plan.
Because nothing goes wrong now. Everything goes wrong now. Nothing ever. If
we're doing this so awkwardly with practice,
yeah,
let's just give each other the technology that we barely function at.
Yeah, it's all part of creating new amusements for the people, Don. In any event, it is 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964, or you can email. It's rick at rickemerson.com. And, of course, the text box is open as well if you would like to do that. That is located right there at rickemerson.com, at rickemerson.com. Coming up today, a big show. So later on this hour, in about half an hour or so from now, we're going to talk to Rob and Stacy, who are the folks, Rob Mitnick and Stacy Moritz, who are the folks behind Secret Aardvark. Guys are running the company. And if you are a fan of Secret Aardvark Habanero Hot Sauce, as I know you are,
uh-huh,
and as I am, and it's neat. And it's not like one of those infomercial things where I'm bringing them on, like, I don't know, because they have a company or because they're selling something. It's just like the best stuff ever. And they have been fans of the show for a long time, and they've been, they were sponsors of the show for several periods. So it's, and they're good folks. So that's going to be later on this hour. And plus, because a lot of people have had sort of questions about what direction, since Scott Moritz passed away last year, they've wondered what the direction the company is going to go in. Are they going to stick around? Are they got the, is the product going to be expanding? They got new stuff coming out. So we'll find out all of that. Rob and Stacey later this hour. Don Taylor's triple feature coming up today. That is three movies that you may or may not have seen or that you ought to see again at some point, linked together by a common theme. What is today's theme, Don Taylor?
These would be films that take place in dreams.
And I saw the list, but I don't really remember what's on. I remember one of the films, and it was the one we talked about yesterday.
Yes.
Which I myself, I won't give it away, but I haven't seen that movie in probably 20 years. So, I don't know, maybe I'll do that this weekend. So the Don Taylor's triple feature coming up this hour. Top five as well. Top five soundtracks much better than the films that created them. The top five soundtracks much better than the films that created them. Geek Watch up today. Penis Watch up today. And then we got a... I was going to say we got a big announcement, but screw it. I'll just do it now. So next week, I think Monday, this is the sort of announcement I got to be real careful on, too, because people will misconstrue this. I believe this is happening next Monday, which would be whatever, the 19th. Probably going to happen Monday. We are going to be rolling out a beta test. Which is just, we get some X number of people, some percentage of the listening base, for our actual, real, honest to God mobile stream for this radio program. Because right now we Bruce Agler was good enough to put together some instructions to let you listen on your mobile, but it's an imperfect system. You got to go through like 9 different steps, and I don't think it works on the Droid because I hear about it every day when I go home, and so it's a huge thing. But we have an actual real mobile stream for rickemerson.com that is going to go into a beta test next week. And then if all goes well, if all proceeds properly, according to Hoyle, then that will roll out in a proper, real, actual form a couple weeks after that. So you may or may not receive an email telling you that you are the lucky recipient of access to the beta test of the mobile stream. And the only reason we're starting it small, it's not like I'm purposely trying to exclude everybody else from it. It's just we want to scale it up, because if we start on the first day and then it just, there's X number of people and it crashes the system, then it's a whole pain. So next week we're going to begin that with a handful of people. So be watching your email box. You may be contacted about that. What else have we got there? Well, that's pretty much it. We're not even going to get to all that stuff. I mean, that's just, I'm trafficking in lies right there when I promote these things, because I know that X number of them will never be gotten to. Final thought about everything else. There's a massive refrigerator in the corner of the studio. Am I the only one who noticed this?
No, there is a...
There's a refrigerator the size of a house in the corner here.
You could fit a couple of people in there, I think. You could live in there.
And it's actually... And it's sort of tilting. It's listing like 15 degrees to starboard here.
Yes.
It says Equipment Horizon on the front of it. Is this the thing that... This is the fridge that Greg and Sarah, that they had... They're like a client of theirs, a sponsor of Fun Employment Radio, brought this by?
I believe so. It does have beer in it, so I would say that yes, it had something to do with Greg and Sarah.
The evidence strongly points to... I mean, we talked about getting a fridge, like a dorm fridge or like a little, a little fridge you have like in your office at work or something. Because, because they have their beverages and then we have our VSO and the whatever. But, when you think about a small fridge, you think of a fridge that's,
One of those little dorm fridges.
It's like an industrial fridge. This is like one of those fridges that they have at a Sizzler. That's behind the counter where you it has like all the desserts in chilled goblets or something.
It's got glass doors on the front, and we actually turned it off before the show because it was very loud,
like a rattling, grinding noise. Because it, you know, we're
going to turn it on and take one of the mics over there so you could actually illustrate how loud it is. Quite loud.
I like your thinking. We'll do that later. Our studio here is not, I mean, it's not tiny, but it is a cozy studio. No bigger than we need, really. And the recent redecoration has actually made the studio seem a lot bigger than it is. But now it actually seems as small as it once was. And it's almost entirely because of this massive goddamn refrigerator that's lurking in the back.
It should have pies in it. It really should.
Well, if it's going to take up like half the room, I think it ought to be filled with midgets and gold. You know, or just gold. All right, well, in any event, it's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. So that is all on the way, and we'll get right to it here in a few, because not unlike last, was it Monday? When did I have that leverage edition? When was John Rogers on?
That was Monday.
It was Tuesday, because it's when John Rogers was on the show. And so this past Tuesday, we had John Rogers on. I went up to audition for Leverage. And somebody asked me, they said, hey, how'd that go? And I said, well, did you hear me saying, like, hurrah, I'm employed as an actor? Well, then you know how it went. That's the answer. There is, you know, it's a don't call us, we'll call you. Except if you're me, the second part of that never happens. I don't call them, and they don't call me. So it's sort of like a non-communication all the way around. I will get another chance at either Glorious Triumph or Desperate Shame later on today when I have another Leverage audition. So that is coming up. And this, by the way, if I don't get this one... I will have brought shame on my family house forever, because I will say, I don't even know. Should I? Well, I said who I was auditioning for last time, right? I was the morgue guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess
morgue
I can.
Attendant.
So I could probably say.
Sure.
It's not considered gauche. I don't even know if it's considered tacky to be talking about this audition before you go. Maybe it is, but it's like, what are you going to do? I'm not an actor by trade. So it's not as though it's not like I'm jinxing something on which I rely to pay the rent or whatever. If I don't get this today, which I, you know, the odds are always against you because you're one of like 10 or 15 people or something. It actually is like it's a broadcaster. It actually is a broadcaster. So it's like a TV guy, I think.
It really does feel like they actually do like you and would like you to be on the show. And yet they keep, like, having you audition for things and going, okay, no, that's not it.
It's like they keep lowering the bar.
No, that wasn't it either.
They keep, you know what it is? You know what the Leverage casters are with me? Here's the folks who run Leverage, who are a great group of people from what I've heard. And it's not just John Rogers. We know a lot of people who work on that show, either on a local or, from L.A. or whatever, that just because they've been in town for a while, or they're friends of friends. And, you know, the creative community is kind of small in some ways. The guys at Leverage, really, they are pretty great. But you know what they're doing with me and the casting of me on that show? Or non-casting, as the case may be. With my auditions, it's like when you have a vacuum cleaner. And you're vacuuming the rug. And you keep going over a string and it won't, you know. But you pick the thing up and you put it down to give the vacuum another chance to pick it up. You know what I mean? And that's what they're doing. Is like, I'm either the vacuum or the string. One of the two. And they keep moving me around, trying to figure out some way that I won't fail the audition. So now I'm, in fact, today auditioning for the part of a broadcaster. So we'll see how that turns out. All right. I mean, really, it's just...
I think you might be able to pull this one off. I mean...
See, you say that now.
Well, it seems more likely than, say, British Bobby.
I do believe this newscaster has an accent, though. I believe he has a French-Italian accent. And I'm not
Seriously?
Making that up. I'm not making that up. I'm pretty sure that the audition today is for the part of a French-Italian newscaster. Which I just, I have nothing. And I think it's in a made-up country, but then they've made up a country and then given it a French-Italian accent just to make life difficult.
So did you spend much of last night practicing your French-Italian accent?
Yeah, but I mean, how are you really supposed to, where do you find an example? What does that even sound like? And don't say half French, half Italian, because it's like, where are you supposed to find an example of a Franco-Italian accent?
You just do some made-up general... faux European thing.
Well, it's funny because the audition... hold on, let me get the notes. Don Taylor, tell the people what stories you're working on today.
Toyota blames driver error for some of the unwanted speeding in their vehicles. Scientists have rolled out mats to kill clams in the bottom of Lake Tahoe. And we have some news on the Mel Gibson front. Apparently, his girlfriend may not be the complete victim that she has been purporting herself to be.
Don Taylor says victim was asking for it. This just in. All right, I've got this here. It says, let's see. Talent may or may not be asked to do a particular role with a, wait for it, you are sort of correct, actually, with a European accent of their choice. So here's my thing. I can just bust out anything. And they go, where's that going? I go, that's from Bogrovia, you know, Bogrovia.
Yeah.
You know, Slovenia. Or some place that doesn't even really, you know, that nobody's ever been to. You know, Albania. What is an Albanian accent? Like, nobody knows.
Right, nobody knows.
So that's what I'm saying. So I could just deliver it in my patented language of love style voice, which I don't think I'll do.
And we are playing the hits for you here on K100.
No.
The sound of Bulgaria.
No, I don't believe I'll do that. So that's coming up later on today. That'll be exciting and or soul-crushing. And this is all true. All right. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Without further ado, let's go to... I'm sorry, would you like me to wait so you can swig some of your carbonated beverage?
I'm timing this to work with you here.
All right. Hey, I have a question for you. When I say swig some of your carbonated beverage, I remind myself of Sam Jackson in Pulp Fiction where he says, that is a tasty burger, and he has the beverage or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this should be a pop culture authority, and so I shouldn't be giving away the farm right here. Is it Big Brain on Brad or Brett?
I believe it's Brett. People say Brad, but I believe it's Brett.
All right. I got to find a copy of the script at some point and figure that out. Because I listen back to it and I can never quite tell. Because when he says, yes, you did, Brett. And it's like, I'm listening. I'm sort of squinting my ears trying to figure out what he's saying. And I can never quite nail it. All right. At the news desk, ladies and gentlefolk, it is.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Toyota Motor Corp said this week that investigation of nearly 2,000 cases of unintended acceleration had found no problem with its electronic throttle system, and that driver error was to blame in some cases. The world's top automaker made the statement after a Wall Street Journal report that early results of the government's analysis of dozens of data recorders from Toyota vehicles suggested that some drivers were at fault in cases of sudden acceleration. Citing people familiar with the unreleased results of the U.S. Department of Transportation's tests, the paper said some drivers who said their Toyotas or Lexuses surged out of control might have pushed the accelerator when they meant to brake.
That seems hard to believe. It's not hard to believe at all. It's always human error. That's the thing. And the reason you know that is from years and years and years of getting these, of just reading newspapers and news aggregation services and seeing, I don't know, I would guess in the course of just being a talk show host, I have seen probably 8,000 stories in which an old person drives to the front of a store and then claims the accelerator stuck. Here's the thing. The accelerator never stuck in any of those cases. Not one of those cases ever had a stuck accelerator. That's a stuck brain on a stuck old person is what that is. And just to, you know, it's amazing that they put human beings behind the wheels of automobiles when you think about it. It's a big steel and glass box that weighs 2,000 pounds and can go 100 miles an hour. And most people are goddamned fools. So it's hard to believe that they sort of let us take those things out on the road, maybe between you and me.
As someone who is a fan of words and what words mean, there is a two-word phrase that the auto industry uses to describe that exact thing of hitting the gas when you mean to hit the brakes. What would you suppose that phrase would be?
Pedal inversion.
You're very close. Pedal misapplication.
Oh, that's totally what that is. And that's one of those snarky FU terms that they come up with at the company, you know, that they really say to customers as just a backhanded way for everybody else in the shop to go, listen, he's telling that lady to eat one. Ma'am, this is a case of pedal misapplication, you know, which, you know, really is just code for
you're stupid.
Yeah, you don't know how to operate a car. Give me your keys now. And here's Dawn Taylor.
A Massachusetts police officer was directing traffic in front of a construction site yesterday when a 92-year-old driver came too close to him, hit him, and knocked off his prosthetic leg, sending it flying about 15 feet away. The incident caused great concern for another driver who witnessed the entire thing from the next car in line. Officer Mark Coelho retrieved his prosthetic leg, reattached it, and continued directing traffic. The patrolman suffered only minor scratches. He's had the prosthetic leg for 17 years.
Good for him. He should get a raise. I like that guy. Just dust that leg off, put it back on your body, and keep going.
The elderly driver was not cited. A spokesman said the investigating officer may have been laughing too hard to issue a citation.
All right, then. I like guys who have prosthetics and are sort of cool about it. Like, who's that? Who's the guy, the Hook? Steve Novick.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, it's not like having a prosthetic automatically makes you better or worse than anybody else. But you got to admit, that's a thing that would certainly, that certainly seeds for grumpiness and bitterness. So, you know, a guy who can just sort of roll with the punches that way, has a certain zen attitude. You figure that's a guy who's even keeled in general.
How awesome would it have been, though, if you were like one of the people in line waiting to be waved through the construction site?
Just to see guys' legs.
You saw the leg go flying off. You're like, oh, my God. And then you see the cop. I guess he said he retrieved it. So I guess he either got someone to get it for him.
Or he hopped over.
Or he hopped over.
Fantastic.
And then put it back on.
Da-dong. Hold on. Let me put this on. Ah, it's fantastic. It's one of those stories that makes life worth living. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Scuba diving scientists are unrolling long rubber mats across the bottom of Lake Tahoe in an attempt to quell a clam invasion. The half-acre mats
I'm sorry?
To quell a clam invasion.
Okay.
The half-acre mats are designed to smother dime-sized non-native Asian clams that can reach populations of 5,000 per square yard.
And why are they doing this? Why? What have the clams done to us?
Well, they're a non-native animal in the bottom of the lake. And they're about the size of a dime, and they can reach populations of 5,000 per square yard.
So now we're not happy with just killing native animals that are indigenous to a place. Now we have to kill animals that have just, you know, tried to make a go of it somewhere else.
Well, we do that all the time. I mean, that's the thing, is that there is that always a problem, often a problem with that, where you have some kind of rat that is not native to an area, and it gets in there and turns out that it doesn't really have the native predator, the natural predators it has elsewhere. So then suddenly you have like 60 billion of these weird carnivorous rats and nothing that will eat them.
This is like that episode of The Simpsons where they had all the insects come in, and then they had the frogs and then the birds and whatever.
That's so exactly what it is.
So what we are basically is we are in fact a de facto all-purpose predator. When something doesn't have a predator and it needs one, human beings can step in to fill that role. That really is one of our great abilities when you think about it. We can exterminate anything. I mean, that's, you know, anything that needs removing from the earth, we seem to be capable of doing it. We are a pinch predator.
They also, the clams themselves, they suck in water and then they filter out algae. And then they have these excretions that are highly concentrated packages of nutrients that help feed the algae mm-hmm. that they aren't eating. And so it promotes so much algae growth that the water starts turning from blue to just green and slimy.
It seems unpleasant.
Yes. So the bottom coverings will remain in place in Lake Tahoe all summer and then will be removed to see if the clams return. They were first found in 2002 in the Sierra Nevada Lake that straddles the California-Nevada border and were likely inadvertently brought in by boaters.
This is like one of those things where it's, you know, you always hear about the fire ants or whatever the hell they are in the South, where it's like they came on papaya rafts or something. Or in every 1970s film, Tarantula, which then came in on. Isn't there a line in the Harry Belafonte song about the
tarantulas in the bananas?
Yeah, no, he's
beautiful bunch of ripe bananas hide the deadly black tarantula. Yeah.
Why would you put that in a ostensibly upbeat pop song, but about a deadly spider actually hiding beneath something you might want to pick up?
Well, it is called the Banana Boat Song.
I understand that, but I don't think anybody was looking to him for scientific accuracy. I'm going to say, you, Harry Belafonte, you must explain now to me the transport and transit of an ecosystem of the banana as it relates to commerce between our two continents.
Just painting a word picture. It was educating as well as entertaining.
All right.
My father told me that fire ants caused forest fires.
Really? Did
That's
you believe him?
That's why they were called fire ants. He said they, when they were building nests, they would rub sticks together and it would cause forest fires, and that's why they were called fire ants.
Well, the thing is, yeah, I mean, you laugh at that, but really, those things seem to be just one step away from actually using tools against us, because they apparently can't be killed. We ought to just, I mean, whatever it is that's inside fire ants, that's what they ought to start injecting into people, just because how could that go wrong? You know, because they just seem to be impervious to, like, everything. I mean, there's just nothing that can kill. It's especially weird. I mean, you step on them. That's about the only way to kill it. You know, I mean, if they were big enough that they couldn't be stepped on, there would be. I saw this thing. Fire ants fascinate me, you know, for the same reason that they terrify me. They're sort of like you know, sharks and whatever in that regard. Where there was a guy literally just filling these fire ant holes, and this isn't as crazy as it sounds, full of gasoline and dynamite. Which, of course, you think that it's just going to rain fire ants and everybody, which is sort of great. But it, you know, he's just like, that's the only way to collapse the tunnel system. But it's like a day later, they had just rebuilt all the tunnels and sort of, you know, and just the kind of, you know, like, we can't be killed. Resistance is futile. It's just stuff, creatures like that that are impervious to things. Like hedgehogs, strangely enough, you know, hedgehogs are impervious to nearly every poison known to man. You could just feed them big plates of strychnine, and they just eat it and just go for a run on their wheel. You know, but then they get the wobbly hedgehog syndrome where they just fall over one day. But they
You probably shouldn't have kept feeding it poison to see what would happen.
I didn't. It's not like I did that myself. I'm saying it is a known thing that they are immune to most man-known toxins. And nobody really understands why, but toxins just have no effect on them.
So what causes the wobbly hedgehog syndrome?
I don't know. I would imagine excessive cuteness or perhaps just... or perhaps that's just the trade-off. Look, we're going to make you, you know, we're going to make you immune to everything. But on the other hand, you're going to have a silly emasculating disease that will render you all jiggly for a while, and you'll die. Here is Don Taylor.
In the expletive-laced custody saga that is pitting Mel Gibson against his former girlfriend Oksana Grigorieva,
a saga, by the way, which I just hope lasts forever. I don't ever want this story to end, because today there was more Mel Gibson audio, and so yes. I wanted to just keep flowing forth like the River Ganges.
We should have a Gibson watch at this point.
I like the way you think. Because what were you saying the other day? We needed a zombie watch, a Gibson watch, and then some sort of when nature attacks.
Right.
Man versus nature. But yes. We haven't come up with a name for it yet. So, all right. Yeah, no, I'm a fan of that idea. Rick Emerson likes this.
Well, there are now hints that Grigorieva, however you pronounce her name, I should probably look that
Ivan.
Up.
Just call her Ivan.
Ivan, the mother of Gibson's infant daughter, might not be as much a victim as recently released tapes of heated conversations between the two would indicate. After Radar Online posted a photo of her showing off two teeth she says Gibson damaged by socking her in the mouth, TMZ has countered, saying sources familiar with the medical charts, photos, and examination notes of Oksana's dentist indicate there is no evidence she was struck in the mouth. TMZ goes a step further, saying that lawyers for Gibson soon will be meeting with L.A. County Sheriff's deputies to present evidence that allegedly shows she tried to extort millions from Gibson in exchange for not releasing the tapes of her him ranting at her. Meanwhile, the New York Daily News reports that Gibson's soon-to-be ex-wife, Robin, has written out a sworn declaration to the court that Gibson never abused her or their kids and said he is a wonderful and loving father.
Well, okay. So then... I don't even know where to begin with this. Well, I'm suspicious of the... I mean, TMZ is a fairly unimpeachable source on some things. Not always, but I am suspicious of the sources close to blah, 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 say. But I mean, then that implies that her teeth just came out, like, how? I mean, she's a model or something, isn't she? It seems unlikely that a model's just going to let her teeth fall out of her head or, like, be yanking them out with pliers or something.
Well, I believe she stopped being a model as soon as she signed up to be Mel Gibson's broodmare.
Yeah, I suppose. She said to stop modeling, thinking for herself, resisting. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't know. I mean, unless she's just screaming crazy, which, given that family dynamic, seems possible, I don't understand. The teeth had to come out somehow, and I can't see most people, especially a woman who made her career largely because of her looks for a long time, just saying, well, I'm just going to knock these teeth out with a ball-peen hammer. It just seems unlikely. All right.
I don't know.
Is this just an excuse to play some of this Mel Gibson audio?
Yes. Oh, yes, it
Fantastic.
Is.
Fantastic. Let's just
because I also have problems with the
he's a great husband. No, no, yeah. No. He's a man of God, Don.
Yeah. The first wife. Okay. Great. He never abused her. Terrific. But come on, we've heard some of this audio, and we've seen his last two movies.
He's nuts. When you say that he's nuts because of his last two movies, Apocalyptica and Passion of the Christ, why? Why the indication that he's nuts from those films?
Well, because, first of all, they are movies that come fully blown from him. These are movies that are completely his projects, 100%. So
his vision.
It's not like, you know, he happened to direct a movie. No, these are his opuses.
Sprung from his brain.
And they show off a almost pornographic obsession with torture and beating and flaying of the skin and whipping.
Was it South Park that made the observation that, like, all of his films seem to have him being beaten?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, they were running through the list of, like, Braveheart and Lethal Weapon and these, and they all involve him either receiving payback, actually, now that I think about it. They all, payback has him in a chair with, like, his feet being hammered with a mallet. And it's all, that's like five of his films right out of the gate I can think of that have him sometimes giving, but usually receiving, like a whole lot of horrific torture violence. So it's like all of Duchovny's roles have him as a sex fiend, and all of Gibson's roles have him being beaten savagely. All right, then. Well, let's just roll the first one, shall we? Let's see. This is. I'm sorry, I have it turned down.
I was never like this. You did it. All right? It's your fault. If something happens, be it on your head. You know?
I didn't
do... Be it on your head.
I didn't do anything.
You did, so you're a...
I didn't do anything.
Wow. All right, so here's cut two. The best part is how she sounds all Prozac'd out through the whole thing. Like, the Xanax has really kind of kicked in, and she's...
I just want to hurt someone or myself. Do you understand? You've done this to me. I was never like this. You did it. All right? Your
he's a real peach, isn't he? Let's see.
I just want to hurt someone.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's a...
I just want to... I'm really angry and really sad, and I really just want to...
He's crying on the inside.
Myself. Do you understand? You've done this to me. I was never like this. You did it. I'm really...
All right, so...
You know, I gotta say, you know, after I've heard... Like, how horrible. I mean, granted, there's worse.
These particular
clips, I mean, honestly, I've had arguments in my past
now,
that were considerably
these are,
worse than that.
Let's see if I can find the other ones. I've got a couple here. Those are legitimate Gibson cuts. I'm trying to find the ones that I had filed away where he's just sort of all right, here we go. So I will play these, and a couple of these may be the ones we just heard, but I'll kind of skip through them and see what they are. We've got this one. So ladies and gentlemen, all right, so we just heard that one. And that one. Maybe they've duplicated it here. Hold on a second. I think I may have duplicated these files. That's my fault. I'll try this one more. Sorry, let's do...
I was never like this.
Nah, no, I don't know. So I've somehow overwritten two of them and so forth. All right.
Okay.
Well, there we go. Well, I had some sound at one point from Mel Gibson. So the thing that Radar, and I don't know if Radar's actually said, have they said that they got them from her, that she is the one who turned them over?
That I don't know. I'm assuming so. I mean, that's where... You know, they posted a picture of her showing off she had, you know, was missing her two front teeth. But TMZ apparently did the digging and got actual medical charts and examination notes from, I guess, a doctor or from her dentist. And apparently there was no evidence that she was ever hit in the mouth, which makes you wonder if maybe she's just, I don't know, maybe she has a dental device and is normally missing her teeth. And then, I don't know.
I think I may have, let me see, try this. If I don't have this cut here, I think I have, of all people, Larry King talking about it. Let's see, what is this here?
The thing is, she did file a restraining order against him, claiming that he hit her in the face. So if the missing teeth were part of that, and it turns out that...
All right. If it was based on false pretenses, I guess, then that's not very clever. All right. Let's see. What is this here?
I just want to hurt someone or myself. Do you understand?
It's funny. I can't even really tell them apart initially because they all kind of sound the same. So here's, I guess this is Larry King talking.
Top experts have certified the tapes are genuine and authentic. To say otherwise is simply a defense strategy. Mel simply cannot deny he said these hateful words, spewed these vicious rants, and these conversations. The real question is, when will he take responsibility for his words?
I can barely get a lung full of oxygen.
Mel simply cannot deny he said these hateful words.
Yeah, so that's Larry King talking about him. I will over the weekend. I'll dig up some sort of a master mix of all of these recordings. The first one I heard, because Radar's doing this kind of smart thing where they're platforming it, because the first one I heard was the one where he was talking about how she looked like a whore and she was raped and whatever, and she was all slatternly in her implants, and then there was the thing where he was. He was talking about, I don't know, somebody who worked for them or something. And so it's like it's like with every rant, it's like he spun a wheel of minorities, you know, traffic stop, Jews, first rant, blacks, Mexicans. And then this one was, this last one was just all about like her and her face and how it deserved to be hit, allegedly. All right. He's Mel Gibson, kids. He's crazy. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
A sweeping crackdown on banking and high finance broke through a Senate Republican blockade, setting the stage for Congress to send the massive regulation overhaul to President Barack Obama. The vote to end debate was 60-30, the minimum needed to overcome a filibuster, but that ensured that the bill has the votes for final passage.
I'm sorry, what bill is this?
This is a 2,300-page legislation that's designed to rein in big banks and protect consumers. The aim is to avert a repeat of the 2008 financial crisis.
Well, I think we all know that's not going to work.
It would give the government new powers to break up companies that, if they are allowed to fail, would threaten the economy. It creates a new agency to protect consumers and their financial transactions. Always a good idea. That's what we need, is a new agency.
Now, but don't we already have all these things? In other words, can't the government already... already break up the... You know what I don't understand about this? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think we've had a couple of different Republican administrations particularly that have gradually managed to, you know, chip away at antitrust laws and give corporations and banking institutions more and more and more power and just, you know, sort of insular authority so that they aren't beholden to financial regulations. And it's like now we're basically, then everything collapsed and they said, oh, I guess that wasn't really a good idea. And so now they're thinking, maybe there should be some regulation of these things like there was in the olden times.
Well, so I'm unclear about whether the government actually owns General Motors at this point, because didn't they get a majority interest in General Motors or something at some point? Isn't that the deal? And then which itself raises all kinds of weird issues, like because General Motors is a publicly traded company. So if it's a publicly traded company and yet the government owned a substantial portion of it, does that mean that the government is then paying out dividends to stockholders? And does it mean that then the stockholders can direct governmental action as regards General Motors because it is publicly traded? These are all things I wonder about. And there's like, as much as the internet has you know, given us just a huge cavalcade and a wash and a flood of information, it seems like I'm not really able to find out the answers to things that plague me sort of late at night. And I think all of the jazz that they're talking about there kind of already existed, because they've already, I mean, they broke up, you know, the telephone company in the 80s. I remember that. And I do believe we have enough regulatory bodies the thing is, as long as some dick decides that he wants to buy a brand new Escalade, even though he makes $12,000 a year, you will never be able to safeguard the American economy. So,
yeah, and you can create all of the, as we've seen with the oil companies and what's happened here with BP, and we've looked at the regulatory agency now that was supposed to be overseeing that sort of thing. You can have an agency, you can have all the legislation you want. It basically comes down to who's implementing it. You know, how, you know, are they accepting big piles of money and trips on guys' yachts?
And
are they actually doing something?
I have to say that I so look forward to the time when this thriving burgeoning news network is big enough that we can engage in graft and payoffs and just cross in the right guy's palm with silver to have him look the other way. I have no problem with that at all. That is part of our great capitalist system. You know, if you got enough money, you can make any problem. You know what I want? Here's what I want.
Okay.
A lot of guys, you know, they say, well, what... But, you know, Chet, what is it all about? What are you working for? You do all this, you know, you get that like Willie Loman thing of, you know, what is it? What's it all about, Alfie? Why are you slaving away so hard at your job or your whatever? And some guys want, you know, they want money or chicks or drugs or, you know, some combination of the above. One perhaps on a bed carrying the other on it. But my whole thing is, you know, I want to be rich and powerful enough that I can have a guy who handles things. Mm. That's what I want. I want a guy who can handle things, and even more so, who can handle people. You know where you just say sometimes, like, look, I got this guy. He really needs to be handled. Can you take care of that? And the guy goes, no problem. I'll handle him for you. It's like in Godfather 2. It's the guy in the black coat and the black hat who follows Michael Corleone around everywhere he goes and then tries to kill Hyman Roth when they're in Havana. That's what I want. Just a guy who sort of – and you know who it'll be? I'll tell you right now. It'll be Jason Crump. Jason Crump will be my guy. He'll be my enforcer. And when I have enough money to hire him, put him on my payroll, Kane or not, he'll kill you. I'm telling you right now. And it'll take a long time if it needs to. So just fair warning. At some point, when I amass the right amount of money, Jason Crump is going to – Vanish Twin Photography at VanishTwin.com. He's going to be my enforcer. And he's just going to – he's going to deal with people who need to be dealt with. There you go.
I've always wanted a guy like. Do you remember the old TV series Heart to Heart?
Yes, I do. Max.
Max.
The cat. The limo driver.
I want a Max, but he wasn't just their driver. He did like everything.
He was like their. He was like a Mr. Wolf. He was like their cleaner.
Yeah, he took their stuff to the dry cleaners.
Yeah.
He would like if they were sitting in bed having like little flirty chat at like 3 a.m, they would just call down and have him make them a sandwich. Boy, I want a guy like that.
Heart to Heart. For the win. I never would have thought about that. I always think that I'm slick with my Matt Houston references. But really, it's you've taught me. Let's do one more here. We'll take a break. We'll come back with Robin Stacey from Secret Aardvark on the other side.
Okay, well, let's do a penis watch.
Let's. Here's your penis watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson, the radio program.
Take a look at my enormous penis. My troubles start melting away.
Wow, wow, wow.
I take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
A former Australian police sergeant told the Industrial Relations Commission this week he did not mean to offend when he used his pierced penis to open a bottle at a Christmas party at Tom's Seafood Restaurant. On December 11th, 2008.
I mean, to snort right into the microphone like that. But it wasn't. It was at a restaurant. It wasn't even like at a private event or a to do at somebody's house.
No.
I'm sorry. This beer bottle is really hard to open. Can you get Bob's penis in here? Thank you. That'd be great.
Andrew Lawrence appeared before the commission on Tuesday and Wednesday to ask for a review of the order by Police Commissioner Andrew Scapione to sack him as a sergeant with the Grafton Police Force. Mr. Lawrence said that there were no other patrons left at the restaurant when he went to the toilet to attach the bottle opener to the piercing before exposing it to two or three times to about six other people, including his wife.
I'm unclear. It's a restaurant. Don't they have bottle openers? You've worked in restaurants. That's a thing they got that around most of the time.
I think it's just a bit of a trick that he learned he could do, and so he was showing off.
Is it like that guy at every party who wants to open the bottle with his teeth or like wants to do it in the door slot or something?
Or do that thing with the disposable lighter where they just put the lighter, like, pop it off, and like, look, I got a cool trick.
Which is the thing, that's a skill that guys, I've put it all together in my head. I mean, you really... That's what it is when you said that he just liked to show it off, because it is just like all of those guys who do it because they think it's going to get them laid somehow. That's the thing. It's like I used to know.
People will admire you because you can,
They think guys think it's an icebreaker. You know, it's like my friend Rob used to do this thing, which, by the way, will never get you laid at all. Just FYI to anybody out there, where he would open a beer bottle with his teeth. And it's like, the chicks dig that. And I'm like, a chick doesn't want to think that you have razor-sharp teeth, friend. I mean, for any number of reasons. So, yeah.
Or that she might have to rush you to the emergency room on your third beer because you've chipped off an incisor and started spurting blood out of your mouth.
You've bitten through your own lower lip.
The Herald reported that Lawrence, who now works part-time in a liquor store.
Of course.
Has been involved in a similar incident in a hotel more than 3 years earlier and had received counseling because of it. And since the latest incident, he had received counseling and modified his alcohol intake.
What kind of piercing are we talking about? I know it's through his penis, but what kind of piercing enables you to open? I hate to be all stern about this, but I almost want to, like, see it in action. I almost want not like I'm asking a guy to come here and do this, but I'm wondering, is it like a bar, the barbell, or is it like a ring, do you suppose?
I'm thinking it might be the ring, because then that would go under the
It seems cap. Like that could
know.
Go wrong so easily because, you know, those caps have razor-sharp little edges where the metal crimps.
Well, it doesn't seem like a good idea no matter what kind of a piercing you have, unless you have some kind of special piercing that's an actual bottle opener.
Somebody should totally get that. Somebody should get one of those implanted into his hand. All right.
The newspaper reported that Lawrence acknowledged his behavior was inappropriate, but he did not mean to offend. I kicked myself later because something that was meant to be fun turned out to be a lot more serious than that, he said. Lawrence was reported to have said before the commission he believed the complaint came from someone who was not at the party and who was not fond of him.
Well, that's the problem with most penis stories, actually. It's something that should be fun and enjoyable ends up getting you in trouble.
The owner of the restaurant said he did not remember the incident because he was in the kitchen cooking at the time.
There's your penis watch.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a-melting away. Bow, bow, bow. I take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way. Bow,
bow. All right, there's your penis watch. We're going to do this. We will come back on the other side with Stacey and Rob of Secret Aardvark. Still to come, Don Taylor's triple feature and the top five soundtracks that are far better than the movie that created them. You were listening to the Rick Emerson radio program right here on the Emerson News Network.
This is my boss, Jonathan Hart, a self-made millionaire. Quite a guy. This is Mrs. H. She's gorgeous. She's one lady who knows how to take care of herself. By the way, my name is Max. I take care of both of them, which ain't easy. Because when they met, it was murder.
Josie's on a vacation for Josie's on a vacation for Josie's on a vacation.
I have no explanation for why that's happening there. That was a flawless segue I did, by the way, from the heart-to-heart thing, into that Midtown song, and then it all went wrong on me. All right, so we're gonna pretend that that wasn't the case, and that what in fact sounded a lot like that just now, in reality sounded more like I don't know this. End of the heart thing. Da 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 da. Bow, wow. There we go.
Josie's on a vacation far away. Come around and talk it over. So many things that I wanna say. You know I like my girls a little bit older. I just wanna use your love tonight.
I don't wanna lose your love tonight.
I don't wanna lose your love tonight.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us today. I think it's my soundboard. It's not even that one cut. It's my soundboard. Donnie, are you hearing how I'm being thwarted by technology at every turn?
That's awkward and unpleasant.
This is what it sounds like inside my head all the time, by the way. Just lots of, oh, for the love of God. You know, this is all going well until I try to play that heart-to-heart sounder. That's when it all went poorly. All right.
Well. I enjoyed that very much, though. I can't believe you actually just had that, though. Well, I make a heart-to-heart reference, and then boom, you've got the theme music.
Well, really, I mean, you know, what is an 80-gig hard drive for if not to have the Matt Houston theme, the heart-to-heart theme, and the JT Lancer theme, which is an entirely fictitious show from The Big Chill, all preserved in glorious digital audio, on my hard drive. Let's try this. We'll just... The best part is I've actually closed it, and it's still playing. Oh, all right. Science on the march. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us today. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. The very best part is that even though that just happened, it's still, like, as is the phone, like, way more stable than anything I ever had at CBS or at Intercom. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't forget, coming up here in just a bit, we're going to have today's top five soundtracks that are far better than the movies that created them, and Don Taylor's triple feature, which is three movies joined by a common theme. Today's theme, Don Taylor?
It's movies that happen in dreams.
Excellent. So that is coming up later on this hour. Next week, our guests will include Ryan White, music editor for The Oregonian, and we'll also be speaking to Dave Howell, former employee at Apple Computers, now of Avatron Software, who's going to talk to us about the development of the personal computer and the application and so forth. And now, because that soundboard was malfunctioning, I will just have to use this this porn music for everything. Like, for the rest of the show. So everybody's just going to be okay with that. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program. I realize now what a poor choice this porn music was. Robin Stacey from Secret Aardvark. How are you guys? Lean on in here to the microphones.
Good. We're good.
Let me just turn this porn music off so this doesn't continue to be awkward. So Rob Metnick, Stacey Moritz, Stacey you guys are from Secret Aardvark and makers of fantastic flavorings, spices, sauces, and accoutrements for foods of all varieties. We had you guys on Outlook Portland a while back, and when we were getting ready to do this show, we were kind of drawing up a master list of people that we wanted to talk to you again. And the thing that Don and I were talking about yesterday is, and you must know this, that there is some... Look, I'm not going to out and out say that, like, the Secret Aardvark sauce has crack in it or that there has, in fact, been some dosing of it with a magical chemical from Diagon Alley that makes it addictive. But no one really seems to have a casual relationship to that stuff. It's sort of a fetish object food-wise.
Yes, it is, and that's how we like it.
Absolutely.
And Donna knows way more about food than I do. Donna is sort of she's the culinary one of the two of us. But you noted that when you give it the Secret Aardvark to people, the first thing you say is, it's really good, and they go, yeah, it's great. No, I'll try some. And then they always come back to you and they say, my God, you didn't tell me how good it was.
Well, that I find that I have to actually go into some detail about it, because the thing is, you say hot sauce, and most hot sauce, it's like different levels of heat and different levels of vinegariness. And that's pretty much all that you get from most hot sauce. And I would like to explain, say, no, it's really flavorful and it really tastes really good. And they go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, yes, and then they come back and they go, you were right. It's like, well, what do you think? I was just making that up? No, it was. But yeah, I've yet to actually. And I was saying this, it's like, you know, it sounds like we're doing some kind of like huge infomercial for it, but it's absolutely true. I've yet to actually meet someone that I've introduced to the Secret Aardvark hot sauce who's not come back later and going, I've started putting this on everything. I put it on, like, bologna sandwiches. I eat it on everything I eat.
And no, and here's the thing, and just the one final observation about just the sad nature of my life, is that I will actually find myself in the kitchen with just a box of Triscuits and then a bottle of like, the Secret Aardvark habanero sauce, and then just onto the Triscuit and then the Triscuit into my mouth, and then just rinse, wash, repeat, like, over and over again. And, you know, that's just not a healthy way to live. But there's
sure
no, there's really, well, sure, says the Secret Aardvark guy. No, have at it.
Have at it.
Go ahead. So we'll talk in a few about what you guys are up to, what the company's going to be doing, and and a lot of people fixate on that one particular product. It's actually the company's Secret Artwork Trading Company, but there's multiple products. My first thing though is that there seems to be some sort of a guy thing though in general about hot sauces. Because I have never – guys are with hot sauces like they are about sometimes with computers and cars where they can discuss the sort of makeup of them and the chemical composition and like how many Scoville units are inside the sauce or whatever, to where it becomes like almost like a competitive thing to like stand in kitchens at a party and see how many like doses of whatever sauce, you know, they can do.
Absolutely, it's the guy thing. I mean, well, I don't know. Stacey, you –
I put it on everything as well, and I'm not a guy, but I think it has to do with the whole testosterone and mastering just the hotness.
It's sort of a Hemingway, I am impervious to all pain.
That's
kind
right.
of a thing.
Exactly.
That's
I
right.
mean, it's always fun just to see how much, if you can take a half a bottle down of Secret Aardvark, you know, yeah. at a party.
The thing is, you do that right now with your hand, but the gesture is effortless, as though you have passed many, many hours of your life. I don't want to, this is one of those things we should have discussed before we came into the studio, but you know, I'm just going to go into it here, and if it ends up being a poor choice, then I'll just have to live with that. I'm not going to use the word stalker, but... Am I got it in my head, the story correctly, Rob, about how you came to work at the Secret Aardvark? Is it something about how you were just – you basically were just sort of really naggingly persistent about it until they decided to hire you.
I was. I had the sauce at a cafe, and I said, this is the best hot sauce I've ever had. And I said, I have to work for this company. I don't care. Just pay me in hot sauce. Just give me something. I want to do something for this company. Emailed, called about, 30, 40 times.
At least.
Please don't do that to us right now.
Did you ever try to disguise your voice and, be a friend recommending you for the job? You know, there's this guy, Rob. He'll be coming along. You ought to talk to him.
I did call from my girlfriend's cell phone, friend's cell phone, so it wasn't the same number over and over again.
And what was the reaction? Did they kind of, we know who you are. We'll call the cops.
I don't know, Stacey. What was your reaction with Scott?
Well, Scott's reaction was, there's this crazy dude who keeps calling me and he won't leave me alone. And I said, well, that's an interesting problem to have. And then he started sending me some of his messages and he said, do you think he's crazy? And I said, yeah, but I think he might be the right kind of crazy.
He's the perfect kind of crazy.
He might be the right kind of crazy.
He's got all these shoes in his basement, too. Which
millions
I believe.
Shoes.
Here's how many. This is the other thing. This is one of those little factoids that came out when you were on Outlook Portland for some reason. And I think to make it even odder, you actually invited me over to look at the shoes at one point. But Rob in his basement has, and I'm not even really clear why, but you have something like, I don't know, like 500 pairs of shoes or something still in boxes.
500 pairs of Kangaroo shoes. I used to be a sales rep for Kangaroo shoes, and they're all like the last models over the last 4 years.
I didn't even think they made Kangaroo shoes. Are those ones that have like the little zippery pocket or whatever?
Is this sort of like Newman on Seinfeld? You just kept saying you were selling shoes, but you were hiding them in your basement?
Kind of.
But I mean, even if you were, color me dumb here, because I've never sold shoes for a living. Even if you are selling shoes, isn't that the whole thing where, like, you sell them? I mean, in other words, people give you money and then they get the shoes. Why would the shoes be in your basement?
They were sample shoes. So you have to bring them into the stores and then they pick which ones they like and then you send them
Are there
off.
500 sizes of Kangaroo shoes?
There was 500 different styles.
There's 500 styles?
And it's amazing why they went out of business, huh?
I was just going to ask if they were even still around because the only kind I even – when did Kangaroo shoes – how long did they exist?
They tried to make a comeback right when the economy got bad, and they existed for 3-4 years, and just this last fall, I believe, they just went under.
Are you holding on to those, thinking that maybe in the future there'll be some retro boom, that, you know, like the next generation of hipster dicks on Hawthorne will be, you know, no, it's all about those shoes with the zipper, and then you can unload them on eBay for like $500 a pair?
That's the plan at this point.
All right, then.
That and shoes with wheels in the back of them, I used to do that as well. Those Heely shoes.
I don't even think I know what those are. Please to explain.
Do you know those shoes? They had like wheels in the back of them. They were normal shoes. You'd see little like 13-year-old kids running down the street and they'd start gliding. Oh, you got to look it up.
It seems like
you
a
never
lawsuit.
Saw that?
No, I mean,
oh, they were a terrible idea. Oh.
I mean, that's like a class action filing, just waiting to happen. There,
oh, they got sued enough times.
I can't even. I mean, don't get me wrong; they seem fairly righteous. But I mean, it's way better than having shoes with lights in them or some crap. But I mean, that's one of those things that a guy in the R&D department came up with. And he thought it was great, and the marketing guy thought it was great, and then they just tiptoed past the lawyer's office. And they said, just go put these in the stores right now. Get that Rob guy to sell them. He's crazy. He can sell anything. So this is like why we wanted to have you guys on, because it's just a fountain of fantastic stories. Rob and Stacy from Secret Aardvark Trading Company, makers of Secret Aardvark Habanero Hot Sauce, as well as the I had this all committed to memory, but there's the Drunken Garlic.
And black bean.
And what I mean is, and then there's a third.
Drunken Jerk Sauce.
The Drunken Jerk Sauce. I've been meaning to ask this like forever. What is jerk sauce? I mean, I will skip over all the obvious things that the audience is mentally interjecting now. But what does that actually mean?
It comes from the Caribbean, primarily Jamaica, and it's a blend of specific flavorings, mostly thyme and habanero and small spice, and it's like saying barbecue or it's a specific.
All right, so it's
flavor.
Just a specific spice kind of a barbecue. All right,
And you use it and you marinate the meat in it, and then also brush some on afterwards. It's delicious.
Typically done with chicken and pork and other flavors like that.
I never know how marinating is supposed to work, so I always just figure that everything is just. I just figure that if you kind of slather it on and then microwave it long enough, that it sort of accomplishes the same thing as marinating. And Stacey's actually pulling back from the microphone in horror. But it's not even really that it's a guy thing. It's just a me thing. I don't really know how to cook. I can just sort of thaw and then sort of heat enough to where that it's palatable. That's kind of that's sort of how I go through life. I was telling Dawn that my wife was gone this last weekend. And if you were to look at my kitchen during the few days my wife is gone, it's like this time-lapse photography where the mountain of cardboard boxes with like the disposable cheese packet sort of grows. And then at 5 o'clock on a Sunday before she returns, it's gone again. As I go through the kitchen like a Tasmanian devil, just cleaning everything up. You mentioned the recession going all wonky and against the kangaroo folks, the kangaroo shoes people. We know just personally the number of folks we know that have started like a food cart in the last 6 or 8 or 9 months. Because they either wanted to have a restaurant of their own, and it was really the only doable way to make it happen, or in several cases where they got sacked from whatever their gig was before, and they decided that was a relatively low entryway to get their own business. And that's how, because the chain of events is what that before there was Secret Aardvark, there was Salvador Molly's, and then Salvador Molly's was something that Scott had started as a food cart. Is that right, Stacey?
Yeah, he did a tamale cart back in the original farmer's market.
And it seems like that's one of those things that has just come so much to the fore in the last like 6 or 8 months. Are we going to have like a big, I wonder if we're ahead of like a big food cart implosion. That's my only fear with people that I know that are doing that it's going to get like so oversaturated and you won't be able to make, a living at it.
They're popping up everywhere right now, aren't they? I mean, it seems like every empty lot in Portland is coming into a food cart zone.
I mean, there seems to be like a finite amount of types of food that people can really, do, and every genre is kind of oversaturated at the moment. So I have no, because there was the whole Thai boom where everybody was like, for a while, man, I don't know what it is about Portland Thai food too, because it was like you couldn't leave your house without tripping over a Thai restaurant that was being built somewhere. And so I don't know what the new thing is. Somebody told me that it's like Hawaiian food is the thing that's taken the place of Thai food.
What is with this town, by the way, why is it so impossible for somebody to just say, let's make good Mexican food? I mean, seriously, the Thai food is great. I love Thai food. The Korean sandwiches, which is the new hot thing. That's awesome. But it's like, really, have you tried to get good Mexican food in this town?
Oh, no, it can't be done. I just I've lowered my expectations to the point that anything that just doesn't flat out kill me is acceptable, because it's like because if I was going to continue on the quest to have good Mexican food, I would just be eternally disappointed. Because, as you said, it's a thing that they don't seem to have for some. And like we were on the whole thing about hamburgers the other day with the ciabatta bread, and the fact that they can't seem to manufacture bread that does not slice the inside of your mouth when you're trying to get your mouth around it. So, well, what do you guys? What is on the horizon for you guys? A lot of people have wondered over the last year or so, if the company's going to continue, if it's going to continue in the same way. I had people who, they didn't know if things were going to be phased out. So, Secret Aardvark Trading Company is headed Where?
Seattle right now. I mean, we're moving our market into Seattle, trying to... Seattle will never be as cool as Portland, but we are trying to move similarly into Seattle as we are here, working grassroots through the restaurants and breakfast places and in through the markets. We're already there in some of the grocery stores, so... Rob spends a lot of time in Seattle now.
About once a month in Seattle, and we're just growing it very slow and grassroots, like Stacy said, through a couple of restaurants up there. Best Cafe, it's a 24-hour diner on Aurora, and just other ones like that. Go to our website to see if you're in the Seattle area ever.
While you're on the website, let me just ask you this. This is a personal favorite to me, Rick Emerson. I keep wanting to buy one of the Secret Aardvark t-shirts, and then I keep not buying one because the only color from men is yellow. and it is, in fact, just the most lemony yellow. It's the most emasculating shade of yellow that one could possibly imagine. There's just no way that I could look like my virile masculine self while wearing that. And then there's a black shirt right next to it. I went, oh, huzzah, a black t-shirt. And then it says, a curve-hugging baby girl t-shirt that will show off your... And I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, I do have a slim girlish physique, but I...
it could look good, Rick, on you.
I don't know. It's not really a thing. I need to augment people. You know, it's people already try to offer me sandwiches when I walk down the street. They go, oh, you're so thin. Have a sandwich. I don't think a baby girl shirt is really the way to handle that. So just, I'm saying, at some point, if it seems like a thing that that's possible.
I went with yellow shirts because I knew Scott would so appreciate that. He would love to see just hordes of people wearing Aardvark yellow t-shirts. And I just want to say on that black shirt, remember that they're really long so that you don't have any of that stuff coming out of the back of your pants either when you're wearing the long t-shirt.
I'm not entirely sure what we're talking about.
No one will see your skanky back tattoo.
Oh,
that's right.
Okay, yes.
That's
no
right.
One, yes, no one will see my thong underwear
that's
and
right.
the and
that's
the
right.
butterfly that is tattooed immediately
that's
above,
right.
above
that's
my
right.
buttocks.
That's
all right.
Right.
All right. And my final thing also is that somebody had actually asked me this because we mentioned that you guys were going to be on, and sort of in the minds of the audience, because Secret Aardvark, you guys have been so supportive of the show for the longest time, and just as listeners and as you know, and we're sponsors of the show, you know, for through various iterations, and are sort of inextricably linked with Vizo in some ways, just because they're, you know, the products that are made here in Portland that don't taste like anything else and that are fantastic and that seem to induce this sort of almost like the monkey with the cocaine lever thing up at the addiction. And somebody asked me if you could buy, you know, like Secret Aardvark by the case. And I think you actually, if you go to the website, you actually can. You can get like a huge, like six-pack box of it or something sent to you. Is it 12? Is it
yeah,
correct? So you can
pack.
Actually get that.
Yeah.
All right. So I will email him back and direct that guy whose name is Derek and direct
him
to
Portland
the
area. We'll even deliver it, right?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, if he's in Portland.
You will actually just take it to his house?
I will personally take it to his house.
Yeah, as long as he's not way out in the suburbs somewhere, because we're really central to the city.
So. All right. So, but see, that's one of the, that is customer service right
that's
there.
Right.
Okay, so the website is secretaardvark.com. Rob and Stacy from Secret Aardvark. And thank you guys for coming in. We'll have to have you back at some point when I'm not running so unbelievably behind because I have to go feign an Italian-French accent for an audition later on today. So let's all imagine the shame that will take place when I do that. The next time you come, I demand that you bring a pair of kangaroo shoes with you. Because
all right, and I'll bring a pair with the wheels in the back as well.
Please do. That's awesome, especially because you can almost certainly not buy those anywhere that is sanctioned by a U.S. governmental agency at this point.
And if we have an intern at that point, we can make the intern put them on and see if he or she gets injured in any way.
The last time I remember seeing a pair of kangaroo shoes, just to sort of close all this out, they not only had the zipper on the side of it, but they were Velcro shoes as well. Like they had the big strappy Velcro thing on top.
I think the only ones that we have that have a Velcro are little infant ones, infant size 7, I mean. No bigger than a palm of your hand.
Well, and because the whole thing about, like, the Velcro shoes were one of those inventions where they seemed kind of like a good idea. It seemed like a thing that was going to work out well, but then it never did because, you know, as you're a child, you know, children are just filthy all the time. You know, they can't stay clean just to save their lives. And so as a result, they would just become, like, matted with, like, string and the crap and, like, blades of grass and schmutz and whatever. And then it just stopped working. So, all right. Well, in any event. Robin Stacy, secretaardvark.com is the website for Secret Aardvark Trading Company, makers of Secret Aardvark Habanero Hot Sauce and many other fine products. We will have you guys back at some point in the immediate future. So
thank you. And make sure to find us on Facebook as well.
Is that just facebook.com/... Secret Aardvark?
Yep.
Excellent.
Do you want a fridge that's the size of a Winnebago, maybe? You want to take that with you?
Sure.
All right, I'll just strap that on your back as you get ready to leave. We'll come back. We'll have the top five around the corner. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program right here on the Emerson News Network. Stay right there. We return momentarily on the Rick Emerson Show. Stay there. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program as part of the Emerson News Network. So I want to thank Rob and Stacey from Secret Aardvark for coming in. We have the triple feature coming up here in just a moment. Don's, which I now feel like I have to use the porn music for it because I'm afraid to use any other music bed for fear that it will just begin looping weirdly.
Just always use the porn music for this feature because we couldn't find a bed we liked for it anyway.
It was like the heart-to-heart thing just sort of possessed the entire computer, and that's all it really wanted. wanted to do was just do the "My name is Max" over and over and over again. Dawn Taylor, what is today's triple feature?
Today's triple feature, because of the film Inception, which is about people who go into other people's dreams and extract their thoughts. This is movies that take place mostly in dreams.
So without further ado, we now present Dawn Taylor's triple feature. Oh, and then, of course, the porn music actually didn't want to play there. All right. And for the love of God almighty, what does a stroke feel like? I think it feels, you know, the show was going really, really well.
It was.
Until I tried to out-clever myself by conjuring up the TV theme that you were referencing. And that's when it all went poorly.
Hubris. Right.
That's
my friend,
exactly
hubris.
What it is. All right. Let me just... All right. Now
you just can't play it.
Now the actual Pulp song won't turn off. This is going to be one of those Twilight Zone things.
So you're not going to be able to play the sound for
God almighty. No, I'm really not.
It was a really good three movies too.
We could play a gripping game of Jax if you'd like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could just tell you what the movies are without, you know.
Oh, wait, there we go. All right. Now, ladies and I'm trying to do this all smoothly as though it was by design. And there's no amount of post-production that'll fix this.
Well, we don't really need this so much anyway because you've got the sound. You've got the sound for the three things.
I don't know. I can't
if they'll play.
I can't take anything as read now. It just seems like it's a world gone mad. All right. Let me see if I've actually got this for today.
Well, if we have the sound, these would be three films that also take place in the world of dreams. I decided there are a lot of movies that take place in dreams, but you don't actually find out until the end of the movie it was a dream. And so I decided not to use any of those because that's too much of a spoiler and that would be unfair.
I believe we are ready to go. So without further ado, I give you Dawn Taylor's triple feature.
Well, the first of our three films is 1985's Dreamscape, in which the President of the United States is going to be assassinated in a dream and only one man could save him, Dennis Quaid. And that wouldn't be it.
It's fine.
I did have an audio clip.
Are you saying that I shouldn't play it over the porn music?
You could either right. way, but it's
here is
if you remember this film, you'll remember there was a little boy that Dennis Quaid was trying to help save from his nightmares, and he dreamed of the Snake Man. And I did have an audio clip.
You know what? Here's what I almost feel like we should do. I almost feel like we should just come back here at like 4 o'clock and finish the rest of this show, and then stitch it all together and put it up online.
We could do that if you want.
Then we could do the top five. I honestly feel like we kind of owe that to the people. Well, do you want to meet back here at 4 o'clock and finish the rest of the show?
Sure, let's do that.
And you know what? Here's the thing. At 4 o'clock, we'll come back. We'll actually finish the rest of the show live, and then I will put the whole thing up in an archived fashion. Because I got to be back in town anyway after the audition, which I got to get to because my mom's is going to be here. So there you go.
And I don't know what I'm going to do for an hour and a half, but I'll find something to do with myself.
Will you now? All right. Well, I'm going to play this close, even though we're going to be back at 4 o'clock. It's the best show ever. Thank you for joining us today. The Rick Emerson Show will return at 4 o'clock. Coming to you live from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk, Dawn Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Thomas Gill, our executive producer, Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff, Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show, made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. It is Friday, July 16th, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, thank you for listening. See you at, 4 o'clock. All right, bye now. I'm not going to play the show prep concluded thing now because, what would be the point? We now resume the best of the Rick Emerson Show. We'll see you back here at 4 o'clock.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep
resumes
now.
Thank you.
Really, if I'd been on the game just now, if I'd really been on the ball with things, I would have had like a little, I would have had a little, I got you, babe.
Oh,
just, yeah. I know. You know, you never think these things through until it's too late. The ship has already sailed and is, you know, is on the other side of the continent by the time you really think about these things. All right. It is 5 minutes after the hour of four in this, the month of July, the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming by. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not really ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. My name is Rick Emerson. This is the Rick Emerson Show, Part B, for your Friday, your July 16th, 2010. For those who came in late, if you are for some reason just listening to this half, like if we sent out a little Twitter thing about this a minute ago saying that we were going to be live doing a... and I made it sound like it was something we did all the time. Like it was sort of a merry... like it was a merry jape on my part. How did I phrase it here? Let's see my... It says, the Rick Emerson Show special two-part Friday edition continues at 4. Like it was sort of a two-for-Tuesday kind of a thing, you know, but that sucks. So, anyway, so here we are. So
we could start making this a tradition. We break for an hour or two, have a snack, whatever, and then come back and do several more hours of entertainment for the people.
We could. You know, it is the Emerson News Network, so we kind of own the joint. We can do whatever we want. Yeah. We are the law! Well, in any event. So, if you only heard... if you're only hearing this part, you didn't hear the first half of the show today. A couple things. Of course, the Rick Emerson Show live stream now goes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for lack of really anything. It's the same reason Oprah's on the cover of every one of her magazine's issues. As she says, well, I just can't find anything else to put on the cover, girlfriend, so it's me. There's really nothing else to put here, so it's just us. So we did the first half of the show, and then three things sort of converged. A, the fact that we run behind just as a matter of course. B, the fact that we were having all of these like weird technological mishaps toward the last 15 minutes of the show, which all stemmed from the fact that I was trying to out-clever myself by playing the heart-to-heart theme, which Don had mentioned just in passing at one point during a discussion, and I said, I've got that right here. I'll play it back. It'll be awesome. And then I couldn't turn it off, and then once I started any sound bed, it couldn't be shut down. I couldn't reduce the volume. I couldn't make it go away.
Heart-to-heart is that powerful.
So then we had the heart-to-heart thing and a pulp song and some porn music all playing at once. And it was just one of those moments where you think to yourself, are things going wrong or have I finally just had, like as the knife edge of mental collapse finally just given out from underneath me? Anyway, and then so we were talking to Stacey and Rob, who are the folks that run Secret Aardvark Trading Company, the company behind Secret Aardvark Hot Sauce. So that happened. And then I had to pull the ripcord anyway to go to this Leverage audition to fight traffic all the way there. So I could say, like, oh, Sacre Bleu, and then get back in the car and come back here. So, but I didn't want to deprive the people who, after all, give us their 32 cents every day to hear this fine program. I didn't want to deprive you of all the stuff that we had, you know, that we'd sort of forward promoted, all the stuff that we said we were going to do. So I thought, why not come back? We'll do the second half now, and then I'll kind of stitch it all together. The 24-hour live stream, which we resume immediately after the conclusion of this program, has actually already been loaded up with the first half of today's show. So once we end this, I know this sounds confusing. It's really not. You just have to follow me on this. We are now doing live at this moment. If you're listening to us live, we're doing the second half of the Friday show. As soon as this is done, we'll fire up the encore of today, which starts with, of course, the first half, after which you'll get to hear this again in an infinite loop until there's a wormhole in your mind.
Unless, of course, you're listening to this on download, in which case you're not listening to the second half live at all. You're listening to the second half tacked on to the first half.
Which they heard live, or maybe not.
Right.
Woo! All right, there you go. That's my little verbal theremin that I did right there. That's what I do. All right. Hey, Don Taylor, what are we going to have in this second half of Friday's Rick Emerson Radio program?
Well, shall we do some more news, too, or just do the... We have the top five. We have my triple feature. We have...
Let's get to some news, because I got to rack up the audio for your top five and for your Friday triple feature. So without further ado...
I stacked everything away.
Well,
because... I thought we were done.
As you noted, we were just sitting here moments ago, and Don said, so... Did you know, does anybody know we're doing the second half live? And I said, yeah, I sent out a Twitter thing, so we were going at 4. Well, it's 4:03 now. You lied to people. So immediately I just thought, well, screw effort. We'll just start. We'll just goddamn start, and I will just fix things as we go. So I'm going to put down the track as the train rolls right now. All right, without further ado, ladies and gents.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
France's lower house of parliament overwhelmingly approved a ban on burqa-like Islamic veils last week, a move that is popular among French voters despite concerns from Muslim groups and human rights advocates. There were 336 votes for the bill and just one against it at the National Assembly. Most members of the main opposition group, the Socialist Party, refused to participate in the vote. Although they support a ban, they have differences with President Nicolas Sarkozy's conservatives over some aspects of it. The ban on face covering veils will go in September to the Senate, where it's also likely to pass. Its biggest hurdle will likely come after that, when France's constitutional watchdog group scrutinizes it. Some legal scholars say there is a chance it could be deemed unconstitutional. France has Europe's largest Muslim population, estimated to be about 5 million of the country's 64 million people. While ordinary headscarves are common, only about 1,900 women in France are believed to wear face-covering veils. Champions of the bill say that the veils oppress women.
Well, you know, it's true, but what are you going to do? Some people like to be oppressed. There's nothing you can do about it. There's just certain people who aren't very happy unless they've got some guy, always a man, either literal or figurative. You're just kind of pushing them around and telling them exactly what they're supposed to put on their bodies. So, you know, whatever. You want to be a nitwit. I don't care.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's like, seriously.
And I think I have consciously refused to have an opinion on this because it's...
No, I mean, seriously, if you want to do what some invisible guy decrees that you must do to pass through the gates of heaven, whatever. I don't care. Doesn't matter to me. And I'm not trying to pick on Muslims. It's not like it's not like Catholics are exempt from that sort of behavior, or Jews, or any major faith. I mean, if you are doing something because you believe that an invisible yet real, all-powerful deity thinks that the way you that you dress is important and will play some part in whether, but it's just like dietary restrictions. You know, Catholics not eating meat on Fridays and Jews not eating bacon, whatever. God's got larger issues if he exists, really. He's got, like, you know, the universe to run. So if you want to get yourself all in a twist and feel like you got to pack you and your whole stupid Catholic family into a Skipper's every Friday, have at it. I don't care. Doesn't matter to me.
Excellent.
You know, that's my opinion, is that, I mean— You are free to behave in an oppressed fashion voluntarily if you so desire. Hmm. I mean, would you?
I don't disagree. The ban on veils is, in its own way, it's just bigotry, really. It's not a security issue. It's not.
No, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
It's pure, yeah.
And it's meant to pick on Muslims.
I've certainly heard enough women who are intelligent, you know, fairly modern women who choose to be Muslim, who say that they also choose the conservative Muslim style of dress, and that it has its advantages to them. You know, you are not being gawked at. You're not being.
But that's a lie.
You know, objectified.
But that's crap. I say, speaking for all Muslim women, when they say that they choose and it has advantages such as not being gawked at. That may be true, but that's not why they choose it. They choose it because they believe that God wants them to do it. So I'm not saying it doesn't have ancillary benefits, but the idea that – because otherwise, go round up 10 women on the street who wear veils who are not doing it because their religion or their faith or their culture. And usually when people talk about their culture, say, well, you know, it's a culture which urges women to cover. That is code for religion. When you say someone's culture dictates that they cover their face, that's code for saying God. I could give you all day, and you couldn't go find 10 women on the streets of Portland wearing a burqa who are not doing it because they think God told them to. So the saying they're doing it to not be gawked at is just a way
I didn't say that they're doing it because of that, but they do that there are other advantages to it as well that intelligent thinking women could appreciate. That it's not entirely about being like a doormatty, you know, oppressed, religious nutcase.
But that's the sort of thing that white people always like to say. I'm not trying to pick on you, but you happen to be the one in the room, and I'm just saying.
And I'm white.
That is a thing that white liberal women somehow always run to. Stuff that you – look, stuff that if an evangelical group here in America did it, you would just call out as the BS that it is, somehow becomes part of a unique culture that has its own style and flavor, that is part of the tapestry of humanity when it's in another country or it's brown people. And you know what? Superstition is superstition.
I don't have any problems with Quakers and Amish people dressing in highly conservative, or fundamentalist Mormons for that matter. And then the ideas behind it are similar.
No, but that's what I'm. I guess what I'm saying though is we seem to exert a great amount of energy scorning behavior that is indigenous to America. For example, you know, everybody rightly gets all upset about the Westboro Church, the God Hates Fags guys, when really they are on the outside what most major faiths are on the inside. They believe that homosexuality is an abomination, and they believe that they'll go to hell, and they believe that they will be punished eternally because they are behaving in an unnatural fashion that is an affront to God. Most major faiths believe that. They just won't say it. You know, it's a thing they think, but they won't say. Whereas the Westboro guys actually just say it and put it on signs.
Well, and they show up in inappropriate places and spew hate.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, there are countries where, they show up in countries and spew hate, but you know what? There are countries where they show up and they spew rocks at you while you are on the ground being the recipient of the stoning.
And that would be wrong, too.
That's what I'm saying. That's my whole point is that just because you're doing it voluntarily doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean it's not insane.
Well,
and it doesn't mean that it's not a superstition. And I'm not, and I'm really not saying that you are hypocritical in this way. I'm saying in my experience, a great many Western liberals will leap to the defense of religions or faiths, you know, as long as they're somewhere else and don't have anything to do with Jesus.
I just generally tend to leap to the defense of anyone to do whatever they damn well please, as long if it's not hurting other people.
No, you and me both. You and I are absolutely in agreement.
You can be crazy all you want as long as it's not like, you know, as you're crazy over there somewhere.
No,
it's not bothering me or anyone else.
I am all for that. I am all for the right of everybody to do whatever it is they want to do, whether you want to be religious or agnostic or atheist
or whatever.
Often
it's entertaining to those of us looking in from the outside.
I just, it's like that Anthony Bourdain thing I was talking about the other day where he said that things that he finds charming or quaint in other countries, you know, he makes fun of in America because it's like Rube or Hick behavior. You know, if he was to see it in some little village outside of Prague, it becomes, you know, part of the local history that lives on in the people of this tiny town. Whereas if you see it in Arkansas, you go, God, look at these hicks. So, you know, hicks are hicks and rednecks are rednecks. Doesn't matter where they are, you know, what they look like. That's my point. My other point about the burqa is this. Here's another thing that nobody says, which is also true. I do believe, and I'm not saying they're exactly the same thing, but I do believe that at its base, at the root, there is a strong similarity. Let me put it another way. I believe there is something of a similar psychological need being met, a niche being filled in the minds of, in this case, women who want to cover themselves head to toe in a burqa to please a man, whether he lives on a cloud or in their house, you know, and because it makes them feel special and wanted and like their body is only for that one special man, not for the world at large. I think that is a sort of, I believe that is a non-Western equivalent to these chicks that you'll like see in the San Francisco Chronicle occasionally who had some weird like fetish wedding where like instead of a ring, a guy like bolted it like a, you know, like, bolted like a, you know, like a cattle thing around their neck. And said, and now with the weird creepy thing I bought at Spartacus bolted around my neck, I belong only to my master, you know. And it's women who like spell their name with a lowercase letter. And you know, have a lot of like, and have a list of safe words they carry around in their pocket. And I think that those things satisfy the same need. And I think you and I both know a fair number of people who exist in that community, in the sort of power dynamic S&M community. And I think that there is just something inherent in the human psyche of some people, anyway, that finds comfort in that kind of weird, smothery control.
See, and I just like the idea of the whole burqa completely covered idea because I personally really like the idea of having a situation in which I would not be judged by my appearance.
But that's not true.
That I wouldn't have to worry about my hair or putting on makeup or people looking at me and judging the size of my breasts or how wide I am or whatever. It'd just be like, I could just be floating down the street.
But
in
that's
my
but that's
cloud
not. But see,
fabric.
When you say that, that's not true, because if it were true, you'd just do it. If it's not tied to religion, then you would just do it.
Well, but the thing is that I couldn't do it because then I would still be gawked at and judged. The thing is, I like it. I like it in theory because I like the idea of it as a cultural norm that women would just, dress that way. But, in our culture, you do that, and now you're standing out even further. So, in Western culture.
You just like to be unhappy, Dawn. You don't like to be looked at because of your body. You don't like to be looked at because they can't see your body. Don't like to be looked at for your breast size. Don't like to be looked at because they can't tell your breast size.
I just don't like people looking at me. That's just basically it. Stop eyeballing me, world.
So really, you need one
That's
of
That's what I say.
You need like a Romulan cloaking device.
Yes.
There you go.
That's what I want.
That's what we should create right there. There you go. So that way you're not having to cover yourself up, at the behest of some, pig man you're living with. But you could just and then gone. Or like the Harry Potter cloak.
Yes.
That's what you
got to
have.
That's exactly what I want.
So, all right. I'm not trying to sound overly bitter about the whole thing. It just annoys me. It's just,
I just hate thinking about clothes. It's really all it comes down to for me. I just hate having to think about it.
Well,
so.
And the other thing is, and this is a very Portland thing too. And again, I'm really not taking this out on you. It's just you happen to be the person across the table. And as many people found out, that's not a pleasant place to be like half the time. But it's such a Portland thing for many people, not for you and not for all people, but for many people to really see like the good side of any religion. As long as there's no Jesus, and it's which I believe is and how many people do you know that in Portland who pass through some experimental stage in their life right around the same time they start talking about not giving their kid a vaccination because it's a conspiracy or whatever, and they start experimenting with I've been going to this Eastern religion temple lately where it's a whole different approach to and I'm not religious but I'm really spiritual and it's like. You just want to go like, just shut up. So just quit talking forever. You can't. I mean, the next time somebody says that they're spiritual but they're not religious, I want to say, you're speaking, but you're not making any sense. That's kind of what you're doing. Jesus God, people annoy me. All right. I just spent like an hour fighting my way to to Northwest Portland and back in traffic, which probably
that explains the bitterness.
Probably didn't help. Yeah, all right.
Or as Cheryl would say, cranky pants.
Yes.
I am going to read this monkey story, even though we don't have the monkey watch sound, because just want to read this story.
Let me find some appropriate music for this one. Here's your monkey watch for Friday. The Rick Emerson Show. She's a bad mamma jamma. She's Dawn Taylor.
Afghanistan's Taliban insurgents are training monkeys to use weapons to attack American troops, according to a recent report by a British-based media agency. Reporters from the media agency spotted and took photos of a few monkey soldiers holding AK-47 rifles and Bren light machine guns.
You're making that up.
In a tribal region near the border between Pakistan and Afghanistan. The report and photos have been widely spread by media agencies and websites across the world. According to the report, American military experts call them monkey terrorists.
That's a clever name.
In a sense, the emergence of monkey soldiers is the result of asymmetrical warfare. The U.S. launched the war in Afghanistan using the world's most advanced weapons, such as highly intelligent robots to detect bombs on roadsides and unmanned aerial vehicles to attack Taliban targets. In response, the Taliban forces have tried any possible means and figured out a method to train monkeys as replacement killers against American troops.
Here we come, kicking down your door.
Between the 1960s and 70s, the CIA trained massive monkey soldiers in the Vietnam
You're
War.
You're lying. You are lying. Are you sure you're not confusing monkeys with gorillas?
And the CIA also dispatched armed monkeys to dangerous jungles to launch assaults on Vietnamese soldiers. So there you go. Monkey soldiers.
Where is that story? Do we have any idea where that's from? I think we both saw that, or we both spotted it.
We both saw this. You printed this one out and handed it to me, but it doesn't.
I mean,
have
it doesn't make any sense, regardless where it comes from.
Yeah.
Jesus, well, that's just unnerving. There's your monkey watch. Oh yeah.
I don't know if I really like that as monkey watch.
It's not really the. Here's the revelation that I had today because I found every single watch I believe except for the monkey watch. And I think that that's because I never actually had that. I think that that is a thing that Tim brought from home that he stuck directly into this big, cumbersome, useless computer we had called an audio vault. And I don't think I ever actually had a backup copy of it. So that's why I have lots of sound bites, like, you know, I have that, but I just can't find the... as long as the important things got saved.
Bitches ain't nothing but hoes and tricks.
I just can't seem to find the, monkey watch. I get all kinds of other things.
That's why we was like, stop, stop, you're spraying the babies, you're spraying the babies. They didn't even care.
Can't seem to find the monkey watch. I got lots of other...
We do not pay taxes for y'all to spray our kids in the face.
But
that's
I got
ridiculous.
But I got no monkey watch. What I have the...
Your father is supposed to protect you, not you.
You know, no monkey watch, though.
You can't really argue with that one, though.
No. So, there you go.
I'm huge!
Yeah, I got lots of things. No monkey watch. Here's Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
A Nebraska cable TV network paid $266,000 for Roy Rogers' stuffed and mounted horse Trigger at an auction in New York City on Wednesday. In a separate auction, Bullet, Roy Rogers' stuffed dog, fetched $35,000 in the second day of the auction in New York City. The Movie Cowboy's faithful companion, Trigger, was bought by the cable company RFD-TV of Omaha, Nebraska, at a Christie's auction. Trigger's sale price outpaced the estimated $100,000 to $200,000 it was expected to fetch, while many other items also sold for far above the estimate.
And I'm sorry, what, a crusty auction?
A Christie's.
Oh, Christie's of the auction. I thought you meant, you said, I thought it was crusty or crusty. I was picturing like, hey, kids!
Well, it was
how much
have
I bid for this crusty gum-like substance?
And there you go.
Now Christie's.
There's even a photo of the stuffed horse.
That's just
stuffed
weird.
And mounted horse. I've been to the Roy Rogers Museum. It's awesome.
How much? I wonder how much it would cost to actually just get Roy Rogers.
Oh wait, I'm thinking
stuffed.
Of the Gene Autry Museum. Never mind. I haven't.
You know, it seems wrong that what's his name? Is it Bullet? Is that the dog?
Yeah, the dog was Bullet.
Yeah, it seems wrong that he went for, I don't know, what, 1/9 or something of what the horse did?
Yeah, that seems a little sad.
Yeah, when's the last time a horse brought you the newspaper? Never. Dale Evans had a horse, though, didn't she?
Yeah, Buttermilk. And she was auctioned off yesterday, and she only sold for $25,000.
Roy Rogers.
So Buttermilk went for even less than the dog.
Roy Rogers' son, Roy Jr., cried at the beginning of the sale as he spoke of the family's decision to auction Roy's belongings. He cried?
I'm assuming the only reason you would do it is because, you know, you're broke. So that would make me cry.
Yeah, but that's about to be solved, like, immediately. Because they're going to give you two. They're going to give you, literally.
You think you'd be giggling up in glee.
I mean, they're giving you $300,000 for a dead animal. You are literally... Well, also figuratively, you are simultaneously, literally and figuratively, flogging a dead horse. You know, I mean...
Well, no, you're not literally flogging the horse.
Well, no, it is. If you,
that would lower the value.
Except if you... if that's what
flogging as in actually...
As in promoting.
Okay.
Because to flog items is to take out, the pitch them. That's what I said, both literally and figuratively.
See, and I was literally thinking flogging, like you had a whip and you were beating on the horse.
Did I tell you about the woman that I had lunch with? I won't identify her, but how do I say this? I had lunch with a woman a couple weeks ago about a thing I was working on. I'll put it that way. It was a business meeting, but it was
sure.
I just don't. And business was good.
Do you play the porn music for this story?
We had a lunch meeting, if you know what I mean. No, I'm just trying to be very vague because I don't want to identify her even implicitly. Anyway, so we were meeting, so she could give me the specs on this thing she wanted me to do, and she said, so there will literally be gazillions of uses for this. And I, for this thing that she was having me, it was a little bit of voice work. And she said, and I said, okay, so tell me a little bit about this thing that I'm doing the voice work for, this product. And she was like, you know, and it's a fine product, no problem with that. But I said, you know, just tell me, how would you like me to describe it? Put it in your own words. And she just said, well, you know, there are literally gazillions of uses for this. And in the back of my head, you just, you know, part of you is listening going, tell me more about that. And in the back of your head, there's a little like gazoo type voice just going, God, I want to go home. I don't want to be here. Why am I listening to this? Can I get some more tea? I wonder if I just was able to sleep with my eyes open, if she'd notice it. No, that's really great. Now tell me more about that. I wonder how long I can get out of here. I wonder if those cookies they have behind the counter are vegan. I don't like vegan cookies. All right. No, gazillions. No, that's great. That's awesome. That was wonderful. Here's Dawn Taylor.
AT&T has exclusive rights to sell Apple's new iPhone 4, but it's rumored that Verizon will soon be able to offer the iPhone as well, maybe by the beginning of the year. Dan Costa with PCMag.com said that right now Verizon is doing well with its own line of Droid phones.
Let's see.
The thing about the Droid platform is that it's available on every carrier. No matter what carrier you have, you can get a Droid phone. And I think long term, that's going to generate some significant interest from both application developers, hardware manufacturers, and eventually consumers themselves.
Well, you know, the Google has that thing where they rolled out the make your own app platform or something now. Mm-hmm. So like you can just piece together an app from items laying around your home, apparently.
I like, though, that what this guy said is basically it's like, wow, the fact that you don't have to sign a contract with AT&T is appealing to people.
And maybe this makes me sound old or something. But you know, my wife just got the Motorola Droid, which it seems to be a fine phone, and it does like a jillion different things. I am not at the level where I want that. Nor am I at your whole like jitterbug phone level where it's. You know, where you're like cranking the thing with a handle on the side of it and holding a piece up to your ear. But, you know, where you're thinking, it makes phone calls and that's all. I mean, I got a BlackBerry that does a lot of crap that I probably don't need. But I just have so little time as it is now. I just know with absolute certainty that if I were to get that Droid, if I were to get the phone that my wife has, I would have time by the time that phone was ready to be turned in or it stopped working 3 years from now. I know I would have gotten to 1/700th of all of the apps and things that it could do. I wouldn't even have had time to go through like the preferences setup all the way, probably, just because. I guess those phones are really great if you are someone who has maybe either lots of free time or a job where there are long stretches of you doing nothing.
Or you're a teenager.
And I'm not trying to be snarky about that. Some people have jobs where there's, you know, like if you do any sort of customer service or if you work on the phone or if you do like a tech support job or even just like a tech job where it's very flexible and you have long stretches where maybe you got lots of downtime. I would just feel like I never had any time to really put the phone to its full use. I am afraid to buy any more functions or to get a phone that does any more because I feel like I would never get to them. And then I could just go set fire to my wallet out back if I wanted to accomplish that, you know? So it is pretty, I mean, it's great. It's a really easy to use phone and everything. But
yeah, I'm actually thinking about getting one of those jitterbugs. I just to have one, that would be my next phone. Just the big giant phone with the huge giant light up buttons.
I'm going to see how much one would cost. I'm going to look it up right now. Hold on a second. Let's see. Hold on. I'm going to look up jitterbug phone right now. How much would you expect? And it comes with service, I believe. How much would you expect that jitterbug phone to go for?
Well, they're aiming at old folks. But, $40.
Let's see. Jitterbug. All right. I'm at the site. It's more affordable than ever. All right. Jitterbug is the easy-to-use cell phone with no contracts, no hassles. Plan to start at $14.99 a month. Let's see. Let's watch the – hold on. Let's see. Let's watch the video. There's an accompanying video for the Jitterbug phone, which is for old people and Dawn.
You know, cell phones today are getting much more difficult to see and harder to hear.
Uh-huh.
And harder to hear. Yes, it's the cell phones that have broken. The cell phones are getting...
Cell phones are getting harder to hear.
Uh-huh. Whatever you say.
So many new features you never really use getting in the way of what you really need, which is, well, a phone. Well, Jitterbug has created a phone that allows you to turn off any features you don't use so they don't get in your way.
This is awesome.
How do they get in your way? You're like stumbling over them as you're trying to get to the dial.
Like they're stepping out to block you on the way to the end zone.
No.
And these new Jitterbug phones are also designed to actually reduce background noise, and that makes the sound much more loud and clear.
The sound is much more loud and clear!
They've even got bigger buttons and bigger numbers, which makes them real easy to see. And when it comes to customer service, most cell phone companies treat you like a number, and if you have a problem...
This guy is clearly who you hire when you can't get Tom Baudette.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's doing that numbers, and he's saying instead of and. Mm-hmm. He's saying, well, most companies treat you like a number, and we treat you like a person.
Yeah, well,
spend more time talking to computers than real-life people.
Computers.
But
scary.
Jitterbug has 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
By the way, and here's the tell that it's made for old people. I have the advantage of looking at the bullet points so I can see what the guy's about to say. Here, if you never before suspected that this was made for old people, here's the big giveaway.
Live customer service based right here in the USA.
You will not have to deal with a foreign accent. You will be able to speak to white people that sound white.
The phone's $100. $100 for crappy.
That's a standalone phone, though. That's not with the Jitterbug service plan, Don.
The operators will greet you by name on every call, and they can add your friends' names and numbers to your phone book for you.
The operators will greet you by name, and they will actually handle your address book for you.
They can even add appointments to your personal calendar, so you're...
That big ice cream social that's coming up next week.
Wait a minute, you're gonna call someone up to have them put the stuff on your phone for you?
Let's listen back. I do believe that's what he said, Don.
7 days a week, live customer service, based right here in the USA. Jitterbug operators will greet you by name on every call, and they can add your friends' names and numbers to your phone book for you.
This is your phone, Don, and these are your people.
They can even add appointments to your personal calendar so your reminders appear right there on your phone.
I dig the GarageBand 1.0 soundtrack that's going in the background.
So you're on the phone, and why, hello there, Don? And I'm like, hey, Sally, could on August 4th, I'm supposed to go to dinner with some people. Could you add that to my in-phone calendar
me? Maybe old people like that because it's like having your own secretary. It's like having a little, like a Girl Friday or something. By the way, so it goes to this graphic here. This video is awesome. I have to stick this up on the website. The video is awesome. It shows a BlackBerry. And to indicate that the BlackBerry can cause you a little bit of difficulty and confusion, it's got a big black rain cloud over it, and it's raining like tears of, you know, it's raindrops of sadness. And then there's a thought balloon, and you can tell because it's got the little bubbles. The thought balloon says, and this is presumably the user of the phone. I'm imagining this isn't the phone itself thinking this. The thought balloon above the BlackBerry says, what's taking so long? Why is this so hard?
And then most cell phone companies make it difficult to enjoy simple services like checking the weather forecast on your phone. They want you to surf the web or download an app, and that just seems like an unnecessary hassle to me. At Jitterbug, they offer services that are easy to understand, easy to use, and even easier to set up. If you want to be able to...
Oh, God. And then I don't know what this means, but the text on here says it's the phone again, but now it's the Jitterbug phone speaking. Yeah. And it says, I also have simple text and the award-winning, I have no idea what this is, live nurse. I'm assuming that's a whole, like, I can't reach my pills. And then they send the ambulance to pick up your body.
What does it mean if you have trouble breathing? Help me. Well, ma'am.
I can only see the dial with my right arm at the moment. If you can...
But check the weather forecast on your phone. Just call one of the friendly customer service operators and they'll take care of the rest. Now you're probably thinking you just want a cell phone to make phone calls and, well... The Jitterbug is the best way to do that, too, but you might just be surprised how much fun and useful you'll find their new services.
How much fun and useful you'll find their new services.
Best of all, Jitterbug can save you up to $300 a year compared to the big cell phone companies. Imagine that, getting better service and saving money. All this, and you don't even have to sign a contract, and you won't have to deal with the hassles that come with prepaid services.
Now, how's that for simplicity? Go ahead and give them a try. You'll be glad you did.
The whole... And, like, the big selling point, you won't have to deal with one of those big, stable, reliable companies. You won't have to deal with a large corporation that has a track record of being in business forever and ever. Oh, well, this is... I think we have found your next phone.
Yeah, except they're charging like $100 for it.
It's even more your phone now because you sound like a stingy old person.
I am.
$100? What is it? Is it made out of gold?
If I'm paying real money for a phone and another like $40, $60 a month for my plan.
But you're not. Where are you seeing that? I don't even know where you're seeing $100.
I was on jitterbug.com.
Okay, I'm looking at the plans right now. Hold on a second. Let's see. All right. No, they got the... Monthly, I'm looking at it right here. Monthly plan, $14.99.
Yeah, that's after you buy the phone, though.
Does it say that? Hold on, let me look at the details. We should get somebody from Jitterbug
on the... Look
at
the top where it says phones. And then there it is. Originally $147, now $99.
All right. Here we go. By the way, this is the reason I couldn't get the view details window to come up. Because it says view details, and it's a link. And I kept clicking on it, and nothing was happening. And apparently, the website also caters to people who can't really click. Because the deal is you hover the cursor over it, and then if you try to click, it doesn't work. Let's see here. With Simply 14, blah 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 blah, but it doesn't actually say. I don't see anywhere where it says you have to buy the phone first for $100. I'm looking at this $14.99 thing.
Well, and I'm looking at the page where it says jitterbug.com/phones, and it tells
all right,
you
that's
how much
it. We're
the
gonna,
phone costs.
Let's see. There's a phone number here. We got to get somebody from the Jitterbug company on the phone. Let's see. All right. Did you just hit your headphones into the microphone?
Yes.
All right. You do that a lot. Let's see.
I'm clumsy. And old.
Okay. So there's the phone number here and the customer service. All right. So they're in Carlsbad. They're probably getting ready to close up for the day. So on Monday, I'll see if we can get somebody from the Jitterbug company.
While I was looking this up on Google, by the way, I found Google brought up also a webpage for something called Pillphone and at pillphone.com. And it's an app for your phone that helps you schedule when your medications
really
are yes, it actually it, you put you it's software for your phone that tells you that it's time to take your pills.
That is awesome. Is there a is there one that tells you when it's time to watch your stories? That's
I
the only
so.
Way that could be better. Hold on, I think actually if I can find my headphones. Hold on a second. Let me find my supplemental pair of headphones here. These are the cheap-ass headphones that came with this this thing that I bought the other day. And it's like, it's funny how we have gone from those headphones in the 70s that were each the size of a car, and they went on the side of your head so you could listen to your Peter Frampton records, you know, with total absolute clarity, to now these things where you effectively feel just like Montag's wife in Fahrenheit 451.
I believe technically the kids call those earbuds.
I don't use that word because it's revolting. Earbud sounds like a skin tag that you got to get removed. These suck, but they were free, Don. They came.
Okay.
This is how you can tell I'm an old person. These headphones are terrible, but they came with this electronic device I bought the other day, one of these adapters. And so, it's like the Chris Rock's dad thing of like, you know, this is like a dollar worth of headphones here. So I'm not, you know, I can't get rid of these because they were part of the purchase price. Therefore, they have value, so I must keep them. What I'm going to do is I'm going to call right now and see if I can get a hold of the Jitterbug people. And I'm unclear about being a web-based broadcast if we are actually – because, you know, the thing is in radio, you can't put somebody on the air without their permission. They have to They have to agree to go on the air. And it's not enough to bring them on the air and go, hey, by the way, you're on the air. Is that okay? They have to actually give permission before their voice is ever broadcast. And I don't know if it's the same. We should find that out, actually.
Indeed, we should.
Because think of the fun we could have.
Yes.
I'm gonna disconnect their end. See, you're only hearing my part of the conversation. But I am calling the Jitterbug folks right now.
All right.
All right. Thank you for calling Jitterbug. They're all busy. I'm gonna hold on the line.
Well, there's a lot of people calling in to have friends added to their address books, and.
All right, so I wonder what kind of hold music there is. All right, let's see if there's hold music.
I hear nothing.
It's because I haven't plugged it in yet.
Oh, okay.
All right, let me just put this in so you can hear the hold music. Is this a known song?
I don't think so.
It's the Jitterbug anthem. It's the unforgettable love theme from Jitterbug.
They should just have that song from the Jitterbug ad playing in an endless loop when you're on hold.
Or just, sort of the sound of a rocking chair going back and forth on a porch and a man wheezing as he whittles a stick.
Did you?
Wait. Oh, I'm sorry.
Invoices, check your minute usage, or even change your ringer online, simply log on to www.myjitterbug.com. It's that easy.
She does sound helpful.
She does.
She sounds very unthreatening. She doesn't sound like she's gonna hit me in any way.
I can't imagine they'd want to leave their customers online, you know, waiting on hold for very long. Well, because
I mean, they're all minutes away from death, yeah. I think, at any given moment. All right, we should continue with the news. And here's what I'm going to do is I'm going to monitor this right here.
I only have so much news left, by the way, because we did do an entire show before.
Yeah, but, you know, we're really giving people value for their money today. And this is all just a way for me to drag this out so I can see if the Jitterbug Woman comes on the line.
I don't know if I have any news left at all.
That's actually a lie. There's always news, Don.
Well, none that I printed out, and I used it all. It was a busy day.
Wait,
Oh, wait, I found some news.
My name is Rick. How are you, Jenny? I am dandy. I have a question about the Jitterbug service and about the pricing. I have a friend of mine. She's very elderly, and she finds her regular phone very very confusing, and Jitterbug seems very much like the phone for her because it's simplified, has large buttons, and so forth, and it seems like something she would really enjoy. So my question, though, she's also, and just between you and I, Jenny, she's unbelievably cheap. You would not believe how cheap she is. And so but you know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah. I can imagine that's probably a thing you hear quite a lot. Yes. How much is the Jitterbug plan? I saw one that was $14.99, and then she, though, said that it was going to be much more than that because there was the phone cost and everything. So my question to you is, just coming in from the ground level where she has no – she doesn't already have the phone. I mean, she just has, like, the phone she's been using. But to get started with Jitterbug, lock, stock, and barrel, how much are we talking? Okay, and so that's the one-time fee, and then there's a monthly. What's the lowest monthly fee she could possibly get? Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. It comes with. Yeah. Oh, 50 comes with 50 minutes. That $14.99 a month. Okay, because 15 is. Yeah, no, that's not going to work. Yes. Okay, all right then. Yes. It depends. One of the questions I had is that I see this live nurse feature. I saw this in your television commercial. What is the, I'm trying to figure out all the services here so I know exactly how often this elderly friend of mine will be using the phone. What is live nurse? Registered nurses on call, really? Uh-huh. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. In terms of the live nurse and also the operator she's going to be dealing with, I know that all your operators are based here in the United States because she doesn't like to talk to people with accents, if at all possible. So is that going to be an issue, do you think? No? Good. Great. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. All right. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. I'm going to talk to her and maybe back in touch with you. Thanks, Jenny. All right. Bye now. All right. Okay. God bless. Thank you. All right. Bye now. All right. There you go. All right. She was very helpful.
She sounded very helpful.
She was like, I don't know what a candy striper sounds like, but I imagine a candy striper sounds a lot like my friend Jenny, who was helping me there. It was like talking to Felicity era Carrie Russell, but like But like with a thing on her teeth that constantly went ding.
You need to hire specifically for that, I think.
Wow.
For the jitterbug, you know, technical support.
That was fantastic. By the way, you will not be troubled by anyone with an accent. Just in case in case you were worried about that. That's a thing that they and she did. She lowered her voice for the push. She said, "Now I do. There are a couple people here with accents, but it's really light. You don't even notice it." So she was, you know, she wanted to go out of her way that if you should end up speaking to one of those people. And she did also, this must be like a marketing point, like a talking point with them on their materials. She actually went out of her way to note again, even though they say it like three times on the spot, that you're not going to be dealing with a big company.
Yeah.
You're not going to be dealing with a corporation.
Well, I don't like those big companies because, you know.
You have to talk to Jews.
Yes, exactly.
So
it's
there you go.
Jews.
Well, this might in fact be the phone for you, except that it turns out you are right because they, to some degree, they jack you a little bit on the one-time cost of the phone. But, you know, but you're going to get screwed regardless whenever you go to get a phone. I mean, that the Droid, which was, and I'm not trying to shill for Verizon, I'm really not, you know, she actually got a really good deal. She got a brand new Motorola Droid for, I think, $150. Mm. And then there's a service on top of that. But that's because she was renewing her plan and blah, 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 whatever. So $150 for that new the Motorola Droid is not bad at all. The phone, $99. Mm-hmm. Activation fee, which is crap, obviously, but you know, they charge you anyway. Activation fee, $35. And then a shipping, they got to send it to you, and then the shipping and handling is $10. So you're paying like $144, and then it's $14 a month, and that gets you 50 minutes and a registered nurse standing by.
And it does have those big buttons,
and
somebody who will like actually put things into my address book for me.
You could just, you know, Tiffany, take an appointment, and just have her put it in.
I could call Jenny like every day
and
ask her to add people to my address book and set up my appointments for me.
I wonder what kind of ringtones they have for the jitterbug. I was not able to. That wasn't contained in the commercial here. Well, all right. What are you going to do? All right. Are we in fact out of news?
Yes.
Somebody has asked here if he has to pay 32 additional cents for listening to the second half of the show. Yes, you do, sir. Please to be sending that in now. All right.
I'm looking at the AP Newswire right now to see if there's anything.
See if anyone interesting has died.
I thought Melissa Gilbert
had died yesterday because she was, you know, on Yahoo. There's that thing where they do like the trending now, which is sort of like the Google search trends where they show you the most frequently looked up terms.
Yes.
On Google. And so having looked that up, there was just, you know, it kept saying Melissa Gilbert. And this is so horrible of me, but I went, I wonder if she's dead. Just because, you know, I like it when celebrities die. It's interesting.
Yeah.
And I missed so many celebrity deaths during the downtime when the show wasn't on. I mean, Ronnie James Dio. I mean, probably more than anyway. Is that the biggest celebrity who died during the off time? Who else died from like November to?
There was a big cluster of them, though. I can't.
We had Ronnie James Dio, and he's the only one I really remember. I wonder if Bob Ezrin died. I think Bob Ezrin may have died. He was a record producer. He produced all of the classic Alice Cooper records, and he produced Destroyer for Kiss and also The Wall for Pink Floyd. Really an astoundingly accomplished record producer. He also produced all of Peter Gabriel's early records. I think he may have snuffed it, but I'm not entirely sure about that.
When did the most recent unpleasantness begin?
October 23rd, Thursday, is the day they fired me.
So it would be...
Are you trying to look up celebrity deaths since then?
Yes. So I was going to see, you know, end of the year celebrity deaths, but I end up getting some kind of photo gallery of pictures of dead people. I don't care.
Wasn't there somebody who died that was then not acknowledged at the Oscars? Wasn't one of those big little controversies where there was somebody who died and then the Oscars didn't put them in that big dead parade thing they do every year?
Yeah, and I can't. Was it Farrah Fawcett? I can't remember.
Oh, she died. But wait, she died while they didn't put her in the thing, but she died while we were still on the air because it was like the same day as Michael Jackson. I think it might have been Betty Page that didn't make it into the dead reel at the Oscars.
That's not the one that they were having issues with. I can't remember.
No, I got nothing. All right. I can't get over how big this refrigerator is in the back of the studio, by the way. I keep looking at it. It's like It's like it is growing, actually, and getting closer to me as the show progresses.
While
like
that, you were gone, I tried. I thought, oh, I should turn it back on because we turned it off.
Yeah.
And I couldn't figure out where the switch was to turn it back on. And you can't move it. It weighs like 3,000 pounds.
No, it's huge. I'm going to call just real quickly before we do your top five and your triple feature here. I'm going to call Greg Nibbler about this and just see exactly what it is. What is up with this phone, as they say. Oh, see, now this is the instant karma for me making fun of the jitterbug people. So now I take my hard-to-use BlackBerry out of my pocket, and it's just I'm just getting the endless hourglass thing. It's just spinning around. It doesn't want to...
It's because you're with one of those big companies that's based outside of the USA.
That's exactly what it is. It's because the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderbergs are responsible for my phone. Okay, here we go. Let's see. Greg... All right, I want to find out exactly what the deal is with this fridge. All right, three.
This is
Don't say it. You're going to say this is riveting radio.
No, I wasn't going to say that.
That's exactly what were you going to say?
I was
going
to say this is Sparta.
You weren't really going to say that. All right, we'll do this, and then we'll do your stuff here, and then we'll leave, go home, and forget this entire day happened. Go and drink the pain away. I haven't even told you about my audition.
No, you haven't.
No, we'll have to do that Monday. I don't have to do it now. I'm going to make people wait for it. Now I'm just getting the hourglass constantly. I may have to break this phone. Right. Well, I'm going to leave a message with Greg.
Hi, you've reached the voicemail of Greg Nibbler. Please leave your name and number, and I will get back to you as soon as possible.
To leave callback number, press 5.
We know. Hey, Greg, it's Rick and Don. So, look, I don't know what to say about this fridge. I feel like I'm in Requiem for a Dream, and this thing is advancing on me while I'm sitting in the recliner. Like at any given moment, it's just gonna, you know, it is gonna Sarah, and then it's just gonna attack me while I'm watching the tippy tap guy or whatever in the infomercial. So is it possible that this fridge could be made slightly bigger? Could we get one that maybe is larger? Because I just don't think it's gonna do the job. I don't think it's expansive enough inside to hold all the things it needs to. Or maybe it could go into a separate room altogether. What say we to that, Don?
I just worry now because we turned it off and then Greg left and now it's, you know, not going to keep things cold much longer because it's not on, but I can't figure out how to turn it back on. And you can't, like, push it away from the wall because it weighs, like, the size. It weighs as much as a car.
Yeah, and also Don's been drinking your beer, just so you know.
One small beer.
I'm just saying, I mean, it appears to have been, I mean, it might be more fridge than we need is my point. It's substantial. It's an imposing fridge. So, you know, just food for thought, I suppose. All right. Well, have a good weekend. All right. That's great. All right. Shall we roll your top five here?
Sure. Let's do it.
All right. Let me get this ready. Ladies and gentlemen, please make way for Don Taylor's top five for this
five,
Friday.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
All right, as we continue the Rick Emerson Show special two-part Friday edition, this is Don Taylor with the top five that I swear to God we were supposed to do like 2 hours ago.
Yeah. This would be the top five bad movies with really good soundtracks.
So these are the movies themselves, not good. The soundtrack, much better.
Right.
Was it difficult? Let me ask you this. How difficult was it to narrow it down to five?
It really wasn't actually that difficult to narrow it down to five because I really decided to pick movies that I just thought were completely, well, except for one on the list, they are just completely dreadful.
They're just without redeeming qualities.
And then I also decided to go with soundtracks that, rather than go with a movie that has like a really terrific score, movies that have... soundtracks made up of songs.
Okay. Right.
So that actually, for the most part.
Excellent.
So.
All right. Here's Don Taylor's top five soundtracks, much better than movies from which they come.
The honorable mention is Flash Gordon. And that would be the honorable mention because it is a soundtrack written by Queen and not really actually so much made up of songs like the rest of them on the list are. If I was going with scores, this would probably be higher up on the list. But I didn't want to leave it off the list entirely.
How great is that?
Yeah. And it's a pretty dreadful movie, really. It can be enjoyable in a campy sort of way, but it's got
this weird, yeah, like you know, it's got a fanboy following, a latter-day geek following, but I think that's because this is just me saying this. I don't mean to be a heretic. Wow, how great is that? I think it's got this following because they are projecting what they wish the movie was onto what the movie actually is.
And the Queen score helps, I think, give it a panache.
Everything goes better with Queen.
Yes.
Wow, what a great song. Freddie Mercury is the greatest person who ever lived. I'm just going to say it. I'm going to say it right now. This is in Observe and Report, too.
You're right, it is.
It's not on the soundtrack, but it's in the movie. Wow. Excellent. We're off to a good start here. These are the top five soundtracks that are better than movies from which they come.
Number five, Vanilla Sky. Cameron Crowe obviously throws a lot of time and thought into coming up with the scores for his movies, the songs that he uses. Vanilla Sky, Tom Cruise, Cameron Diaz, kind of a science fiction, romantic mystery thing. Just not a movie that really works.
It's not very good.
It's not very good. But the soundtrack has music by R.E.M., Radiohead, Peter Gabriel, Jeff Buckley, Bob Dylan, The Chemical Brothers. And what we are listening to here is Keep On Pushing by The Impressions.
Somebody described Vanilla Sky and then actually Elizabeth Town as paying $10 to hear what's on a guy's iPod, you know, yeah, that particular year. And, you know,
my first thought when we were doing this was Elizabeth Town, and I went in the back and I looked at the soundtrack, and the soundtrack for that movie isn't even that good.
Yeah, it's okay. It's just sort of predictable. It's not. That is a movie that is like, it's like a tepid bath, you know, better than no bath, I suppose, but not very enjoyable.
But Vanilla Sky is just...
It's Drek.
A bad movie.
But here's the thing about Vanilla Sky. It's one of those movies that somehow, in some bizarre way, in like 10 years, people will start to say is an underrated classic.
Yeah, and they will be wrong.
Yeah, no, they're wrong now, they're wrong then. It's just nothing. I don't know what possessed him to make it. I mean, I don't think he's ever really said why he made Vanilla Sky. I mean, there's really no reason. And it's like, I just don't get what appeals to Cameron Crowe. You look at the movies he makes, and then you look at that movie, and I don't understand what made that guy think that's the project for me.
Yeah, that makes no sense in his body of work at all.
No. No, it'd be like me doing an Esperanto gardening show. Just, there's no reason for that. These are the top five soundtracks that are much better for the movies, much better than the movies from which they come.
Number four, I Am Sam.
This is the Sean Penn retarded guy movie?
Yes, as Robert Downey Jr. said in Tropic Thunder, this is where he went full retard, and it didn't work.
Was it like a vanity thing that he directed or write it?
I'm not sure. It was written and directed by someone named Jesse Nelson, and I'm not sure why he did it, how he got involved in it. It's a terrible movie. It's just 2 hours of cringing. But the entire soundtrack is these really interesting people doing covers of Beatles songs. This is Ben Folds doing Golden Slumbers. There are covers by Rufus Wainwright, Sarah McLachlan, Eddie Vedder, Black Crowes, Paul Westerberg, Nick Cave did a couple. Let It Be. Nick Cave's cover of Let It Be is really good. I think Eddie Vedder's cover of You've Got to Hide Your Love Away got a lot of airplay.
That sounds familiar.
Out.
Seems like a thing I might have heard. This is actually quite. Like I said, I detest Ben Folds, and this is actually quite good. I mean, I guess it's. You really have to actively work to suck if you're covering a Beatles song. Yes. I mean, it takes a lot of effort. Not that people can't do it, but it takes a lot of effort. It's almost like he's discovered what actual feelings sound like in a song. It's amazing. He's sort of method acting his way through it, I guess. All right. These are the top five songs, top five soundtracks, much better than the movies from which they came.
Number three, Batman Forever.
Yeah.
Horrible movie. Joel Schumacher. This was the Val Kilmer thing. But it had some really good songs in it. There's a Seal song in it called Kiss from a Rose.
Oh, I know.
That got, yeah, won three Grammys. This is Hold Me, Throw Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me, You Too. But it's got songs by The Offspring, Nick Cave again, Massive Attack, PJ Harvey.
This is the one I remember, this and that.
Flaming Lips did a couple of songs on the soundtrack.
I suppose this is a good song. I just can't tell anymore because I had to. What year was this? 92, 93?
95.
95? Really?
Yeah.
That late? Then I guess I couldn't have been playing. Why did I hear this so often then? Because I wasn't a DJ at that point.
One of the things about the soundtrack though is this was also there are only five songs on the release soundtrack actually appeared in the movie. This is one of those things where they put together this super cool soundtrack to try and make the movie seem cooler, and it didn't really work.
I guess this terrible. I must have been in the same building as a radio station that played this all the time. That must be why I've heard it, because I'm not really a U2 fan. And so I must have just heard this. I know that I heard that Seal song, like, on the hour, every hour, for what seemed like years. God. I wonder if at any point during that movie they thought to themselves, this is awesome. This is going to be the definitive entry in this franchise.
Oh, it's just, yeah, it's just a huge pile of steaming crap.
I dig you, Don Taylor. And the thing about Schumacher is his career never really recovered from that. I mean, it's not like he's destitute, but I mean, I don't think anybody ever really looked at him in the same way after that.
Phone Booth, the movie he made with Colin Farrell, really pared down, really low budget, really got back to actually directing an actor doing something. And that was actually, that was quite a good movie.
And that Tigerland movie, too, that was him, right?
That was interesting.
Yeah. Was this before he made 8mm? Because that's him, right?
Yes, I believe so.
And that's also a movie that could have been good that was just...
That, is that him or De Palma?
No, that wasn't De Palma. I'm almost certain it was Joel Schumacher. Because it was... Because it could have been a great movie, and then they... It's almost like they said, it's almost like they did a producer's thing. Of like, we have... What we need you to do is to take this powerful, vibrant script, and we need you to reduce it to a series of tepid cliches. And we are looking for the right man... just to strip out any vitality or soul from this can't-miss project. Joel Schumacher, are you that man? He went, yes, I am! And then he just did it.
Oh, and while you're there, could you inject a little bit of uncomfortable homoeroticism?
Yes. You're darn right. Oh, God. I remember watching 8mm, and it is by Schumacher, and just thinking to myself, I don't even know. Just thinking of when you can sort of see echoes of what might have been an interesting script or a good movie, and then you realize that now you have been deprived of that. You will. It's like someone holding it's like someone holding something shiny in front of you and then just smashing it to pieces on the table, going, and you'll never put it back together. Jesus. All right, these are the top five soundtracks much better than the movies from which they come.
Number two, Streets of Fire.
This is 2 days in a row or two top fives in a row. We have Streets of Fire.
This is The Blasters, One Bad Stud. As we talked yesterday, we played some Gene Steinman songs, including Fire Incorporated's Nowhere Fast. Steinman wrote a bunch of stuff. He wrote, like, I think, two just huge Wagnerian rock songs for this that were part of the soundtrack, Nowhere Fast and Tonight Is What It Means to Be Young. And then there's a number of other songs. It's a, again, terrible movie, directed by Walter Hill, 1984, advertised as a rock and roll fable. And just awful. Michael Paré and Willem Dafoe. But it has these great songs. There's a song by The Fix. There's songs by Maria McKee and Dan Hartman and Ry Cooter. A couple of songs by The Blasters. And, of course, the two Jim Steinman songs. The music is really very good. But
what year was this event?
That was 84.
So Walter Hill. So 84 would have been... What had he made by that point? Because Walter Hill's made some movies that I quite liked, actually. He made, people can snicker, but he made a great movie with Ralph Macchio, a movie called Crossroads with Joe Seneca.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a terrific
Which
movie.
Is a great movie. Crossroads is one of my favorite films. One of those movies that is a little hokey, but that I discovered at exactly the right time in my life, when I was sort of like really swept up in classic rock and then, you know, working my way back through the Stones and Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters and... You know, all of that Chicago blues stuff, and that movie really just rings all of the greatness out of that, and just distills it down into this really, really quite excellent film. And then he actually made, you know, last week you had Humans as Prey, and one of those was the Ice-T movie Surviving the Game. He made the other movie that Ice-T did that year, which is Trespass. That was actually Walter Hill.
Yes, yeah, he directed that. He also he wrote the screenplay for The Drowning Pool. He directed The Driver, if you remember that. Also, he directed The Long Riders, which is one of my favorite westerns.
I don't think I know that.
How can I? I'll just click because my brain is going. But yes, yeah, Stacy Keach and James Keach. It was the one where it was teams of brothers. There were the younger brothers and the Fords and the Millers and Jesse James and his brother, and they were played by brothers. There was the Keaches. Stacy and James Keach, Christopher Guest and his brother Nicholas Guest played Charlie Ford and Robert Ford. Dennis Miller and Randy Quaid were a pair of brothers, and yeah, it was, and they were all.
I've never seen that.
Oh, it's terrific!
All right, these are the top five songs. The thing about working on this show is the list of things I have to watch is just going to become so endless so quickly. These are the top five soundtracks, much better than the movies from whence they came.
Number one, Queen of the Damned. This is a film. It was based on one of Anne Rice's vampire novels, in which Lestat becomes a rock star. Horrible
it's
book.
Hard to see how that could go wrong.
Horrible, horrible book. Terrible, terrible, terrible movie. But the soundtrack was the first project that Jonathan Davis did outside of Korn. And he originally was going to sing the vocal. It was like the songs for Lestat's band and other music and the thing. He was originally going to do the vocals on the songs, but he had contractual obligations with Sony and he couldn't sing. So what he did is he hired a bunch of other guys to actually do the songs for him. I did have them here somewhere, but I
here's
lost
the one,
my list.
The thing I should remember about this movie is that my good friend Jerris Minsky, who is part of Emerson Starship and that has been involved with a lot of our projects and is part of the kind of the filmmaking circle that I sort of orbit through occasionally. But Jerris has a great voice, and he's an expert at doing that, one man kind of thing. And that how guitarists have a sort of guitarists have a warm-up riff they will play?
Yeah.
Like when they plugged in their guitar and they've tuned up and they're like, okay, and they'll do like, you know, they'll just like run through whatever, like Sweet Home Alabama a couple times. Jerris's warm-up dialogue when he gets behind the microphone is just to go, Queen of the Damned, like 100 times, which is awesome.
Well, yeah, some of the songs, this is Wayne Static of Static X. You also had the lead singer from Disturbed, who, you know, a guy from Linkin Park. The Deftones did a song, Marilyn Manson did a song, Papa Roach did a song. It's a really, 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 especially if you like this kind of gloomy hardcore death metal stuff, it's a really awesome soundtrack for one of the most horrible movies that's been a very long time.
And I should tell you, actually, the only Anne Rice book I ever read, I read the original Interview with the Vampire, and that was it. And I it was just not to my taste. But even Interview with the Vampire, as much as it sort of worked, I could just see that with the slightest nudge, it would have just become dreadful. I mean, her writing was like right up to the point of camp.
Yeah.
And it would just one little, you know, one step over the line and it was just going to be crap. And it sounds like she may have gone over that line.
Oh, yes, indeed. Oh, yes. Yeah. Somewhere about mid-career. She also became one of those writers that insisted that she didn't need an editor.
Yeah.
And she sold enough books
that she could get away with it.
That she could get away with it.
Those writers are always wrong.
And she even posted online to her blog that that this was what her readers wanted. They wanted her undiluted writing, just what came straight out of her brain onto the page. And she would be doing them a disservice by allowing an editor to guide her artwork. And the books are just dreck. Well, they're just horrible.
Every writer who does that, who says, I no longer need an editor, they immediately begin to suck. See, also Thomas Harris, by the way, who, when largely because I believe he is I believe he shares his bed with an executive at his book company. Thomas Harris no longer needs an editor, so he gives us, Hannibal the drag queen sort of mincing around and eating people for 300 pages.
Well, you know, Hannibal always struck me as more of a dare anyway. Like, you know, you want another book? You keep insisting I do another book? Okay, I'll do another book, but there's no way you can make a movie out of this.
Yeah, well...
And then they do, and you're like... And he was probably just giggling to himself maniacally the whole time.
Well, and then there's... Hannibal is bad, and then there's Hannibal Rising,
oh,
which
God.
Is the fourth one, which is just like... It's so unbelievably bad that it sort of becomes... It is the closest I've ever seen in a book to when people go, no, this movie is so bad, it's wonderful. I'd never really seen that in a book until I read Hannibal Rising, which I think it went through several other types, like Young Hannibal, and one of them was, I swear to God, one of his working titles was like Behind the Mask, and I mean, which tells you right there like how non-seriously he was taking it. So there you go. It's always a bad sign we've actually talked through the entire song right there. So
and yes to somebody on thing, I may have just said that Korn and Disturbed are death metal.
I knew you were going to get comments about that. Rick Emerson did not point it out. As soon as you said, because here's the thing.
Should I call it gloomy angst metal instead?
They should call it acid rock. It's when you said that, I thought, there's going to be some guy in like in a deicide shirt, or something. It's just, you are failing to draw the distinctions between death metal and European grindcore. Or whatever the hell. All right. And so there you go. I don't even know what death metal is really. I mean, it's just it's one of those things that you just it's just best to smile and nod and then just back away. All right. Okay. There you go.
That was the top five.
All right. There's your top five. So are we completely out of news? Is that what you're saying?
Unless I read it off the internet.
That's okay. All right. Well, let's.
We weren't supposed to be here anymore.
Let's just roll directly into then your. I was trying to find something to separate the triple feature from the whatever. But we'll just roll directly into that. Let me see if I can find some. Well, we'll just use this. This will be our triple feature music for today.
Oh, it's not the porn music.
No. All right, so Dawn's triple feature in which she takes three seemingly unrelated films or three films you may not have heard of or you may not have watched recently, and she brings them all together under a common overarching uniting element. What is that element today, Dawn Taylor?
Today it is movies that largely take place in the world of dreams. Because of this weekend's release of Inception, the Christopher Nolan's new film, which, by the way, I saw earlier this week, and it's really, really good. Really excellent. I can't recommend it highly enough. So I went and I decided, as I'd mentioned previously, not to use any movies that basically you find out at the end of the movie that it's a dream.
Right.
Because there are an awful lot of really good movies that's the case. But also, if someone I'm talking to, for example, hasn't seen this movie and I share it with them for that, you know, you should see this movie. Oh, and at the end, it's all a dream.
You were referencing a specific Tim Robbins film.
Yes.
And
I discovered when I was looking at it and really thinking and brainstorming these, I realized that a lot of the really good ones you don't find out until the end. So these you always know. The first one is 1985's Dreamscape with Dennis Quaid as Alex Gardner, a psychically gifted young man who is hired to help in this experiment where he goes into people's dreams and helps them out. But of course, there are evil bad guys that want to pervert his gift for evil. And
scientists and government officials.
And kill the president. And he ends up inside the president's horrible nightmare of a post-apocalyptic wasteland. We do have a little sound here. This is from when Dennis Quaid goes into a young boy's nightmare to try and help him.
Dreamscape.
Buddy. Buddy, what are you doing?
Are you the babysitter, Alex?
Yeah, I'm the babysitter.
Because most of the time, they just leave me here.
You don't have to be afraid.
You know the snake man?
The who?
The snake man.
Snake man? What do you mean, like the boogeyman?
He's outside. He wants to come in and get me. The snake man.
Oh, hey. I'm not going to let him get you. Just let me see who it is, all right?
Please don't answer it.
It's probably not even him. You see, there's nobody there.
Are you sure, Alex? He's always there.
And it is indeed.
Well, that's just
a snake man.
That's my dad, but he won't help us.
Oh yeah, dad's useless.
Little bastard's right.
Yeah, but dad gets his off camera. But yeah. You had mentioned you hadn't.
God, this just sure goes on and on.
There's a snake man.
Just it's a series
scary.
Of unpleasant sounds.
But yeah, it's 1985, so the special effects really don't hold up a lot of the time. But at the same time, though, it is actually a pretty interesting representation
it's a great,
going into people's dreams.
It's a great movie. I saw Dreamscape around the time that it came out, which would have been, what did you say it was? It was
85.
Yeah, and I remember seeing Dreamscape and thinking it was really good. It's a great idea for a movie that is pretty well executed given what they had to work with. And the snake thing scared the hell out of me when I was a kid, by the way. So, yeah, I was like 12 or something. It terrified me, yeah.
So the second one I have is a film that I recommended to you at one point, but I don't know if you ever got around to seeing it.
This is the 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T.
Yes, indeed.
I found that on the Intertron, and I downloaded it, but it was in that weird format that requires me to now burn it to a DVD or something. Anyway, so I have not watched it, but I do possess it. It is in my possession.
Well, a film from the early 50s, only film that was screenplay and lyrics from Dr. Seuss. And he later decided, after the film was released, he didn't like it, so he expressed his dismay. But it is a freaky, weird movie about a little boy played by Tommy Reddick of Lassie, who falls asleep while he's practicing his piano lessons, and he has this insane dream of being captured by his evil piano teacher, and along with like these thousands of other boys, and they're going to be forced to play in this piano concerto. And there's music, and there's weird Dr. Seussian guys dancing around, and all of the art direction and the sets and everything are based on Dr. Seuss's art. And we have a clip here. This is Bart, young Bart Collins, being taken down in an elevator into the musical dungeon. There's a large shirtless man with a hood who looks like an executioner serving as elevator operator.
Down, please.
First floor dungeon.
Jesus. Movie is this?
Molten lead, chopping blocks, and hot boiling oil. Second floor dungeon.
It's hard to believe that Dr. Seuss may not have.
Jewelry department. Leg chains, ankle chains, neck chains, wrist chains. Thumbs, screws, and nooses of the very finest robe.
And when he actually gets down to the dungeon, then there's an incredibly elaborate musical number, dance number, that is one of the strangest, gayest things you have ever seen, with these half-naked, male dancers dancing around with these bizarre Dr. Seussian instruments, giant drums and weird elaborate pipes that they're playing and that sort of thing. There's also, speaking of the gayness, there's a the villain in this, Dr. Terwilliger, the piano teacher, is played by Hans Conried, and he has a one of my favorite musical numbers of any movie ever, where he's getting ready for Domido Day, which is when he's going to have all of the children play their piano thing, and he has a song called Domido Duds, where he's having everyone dress him up, his minions dress him up in his outfit for Domido Day.
This does sound unbelievably weird and gay. Right.
It's one of the best movies ever.
Yeah, I had this whole thing about getting ready to watch it, but it seems like that might leave me harmed mentally in some way. All right, these are the Don Taylor's triple feature, three songs brought together by the common theme of taking place in a dream.
And the third one is a 2006 film called Paprika, which comes from Japan. It's anime. You can actually just start playing the sound now. It's just music. It's about a world in which a techno geek has created this device that allows therapists to enter patients' dreams and explore their unconscious. But an evil cabal gets a hold of it and begins using it to create a mass nightmare that is causing people to commit suicide. So this psychotherapist uses her alter identity, a dream detective named Paprika, to go into the dream world and try to fix things. This particular piece of music comes from a parade when the dream world is overflowing into reality to such an extent that it's just marching as a mass parade down the middle of
that sounds fantastic
city. And it's giant sinister toys and frogs, huge frogs playing instruments, and appliances, you know, refrigerators and blenders hopping along, and it's one of the best movies I've ever seen as far as just expressing the complete absurdity and weirdness of dream logic. And it uses animation just beautifully to create this world.
Excellent.
Both reality the dream world.
Fantastic. Well done, Don Taylor.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. That was worth a 5-hour wait. All right, so there we go. So at long last, it is what? God, it's 5:30.
It is.
God almighty. Well, I guess a good 90 minutes of that was me being gone, though. So that is value for your money, is what that is.
This is about the time I told my husband I'd actually be home from the office, as it were.
Now, fortunately, my wife works until 12:30 at night. She works until midnight, you know, 30. Unfortunately, my mother is in town today, as I found out. Fortunately, though, she is having dinner with my uncle, and he apparently can't tell time anymore, so they could just be there endlessly. And so, you know, it doesn't matter.
He needs a jitterbug phone. There's probably a thing on there that would cue him as to when his appointments are that the operator has put into his phone for him.
I think he can have phone calls without the aid of a phone at this point. So I think he can have long, long, detailed conversations without any sort of communicative device but his own imagination. All right, it is 5:30. Unbelievably. So, anywho, don't forget, next week, our guests include Dave Howell, who is a former programmer for Apple, and will talk to us about what it was like to work there, as well as computer culture, the march of the personal computer, application development, and so forth. Monday, Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, and Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. That'll all be happening on Monday. Also, next week sometime, we're going to be rolling out the beta test for the actual Rick Emerson Show mobile stream. So you may or may not get an email about that. If you don't fret. Don't wig it out. Don't go mental. Whatever. We'll be rolling it out kind of for everybody as soon as we possibly can. But we're going to start small, scale it up, make sure that we don't crash the entire joint. And that's going to be starting sometime next week. We'll be inviting a few people to be beta testers for the mobile stream. And so forth. Finally, this show is available now via iTunes. If you search iTunes, you just get old versions of the show, like the KUFO version or whatever. So you want to go to rickemerson.com, look for the iTunes logo, click on that, and you can subscribe to this via iTunes or your favorite RSS podcast aggregator. It's also going to be playing in a best-of fashion. We'll be encoring this show and some of the other shows from this week 24 hours a day immediately following the end of this show, which is about 2 minutes from now. And it's time to stop the porn music. There we go. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor for hours and hours and hours, longer than she planned. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Our executive producer is Bruce Agler. And our chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. It is Friday, July 16th, 2010, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. Thanks for listening. Be safe. See y'all on Monday. Bye now. And show encores next on the Rick Emerson live stream. See you Monday.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.